Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network all over the country on Saturday, July 21st, 2018. This is episode 1507. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smartwatches. We got augmented reality. We got it all. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free. Anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Hey, fear not. Fear not. You can still reach us via Skype or some such thing. 8888-ASK-LEO. Call in. We got a website if you want to call the website, or rather visit the website, and that's where you'll find all the stuff we talk about. That website is techguylabs.com. And we have a chat room, which is kind of cool. It's a chance for you to join the cool kids in the back of the class. That's at irc.twit.tv. And that's family friendly. It's nicely moderated by but a team of community moderators who do such a good job. A lot of talk about the new MacBook Pro, and I have one. I'm sitting in front of it right now. So Apple last week surprised everybody, especially those people who had just bought a MacBook Pro after the Worldwide Developers Conference, thinking, oh, there's not going to be a new MacBook Pro, and released a new MacBook Pro. And they released it with the new Intel processors, the 8th generation processors, including one, the i9, that has 6 cores in it. Apple didn't change the design at all. It's exactly the same design as last year's MacBook Pro and the year before. Well, actually, there's one exception. They did make a slight improvement to the keyboard. They said that the improvement was to make it less noisy. Here, I'll type on it. It is really slightly less clicky. What they didn't want to admit to, because they're facing 3 class action lawsuits about the durability of the keyboard, what they didn't want to admit to is that they also fixed its durability, although a leaked memo has now shown that that was one of the reasons. What they did is they added a little kind of barrier, a little shield, a little silicone shield to keep crumbs from getting in underneath the keys, which had been the problem, even dust. And making a key non-functional. And because of the design of this keyboard, Apple has a fetish for making things thin. And so they made the design of this keyboard very difficult to repair. You actually have to replace much of the computer. It's a $700 fix if you don't have the warranty. So Apple did put a little dome in there. It actually improves the keyboard. Now, I should tell you, I'm one of the people who hates these. They call it the butterfly key. That's Apple's term for it. I've got, the first butterfly key keyboards, returned the computer, got the next generation, returned the computer. This one I'm going to keep. It's a slight difference. Still, the travel is very short. The keys move very little. But what I didn't like about the old one is when it hit the bottom, it really was a thud. It really hurt a little bit. And I think the little silicone barrier, not only sealing it from crumbs and making it a little bit quieter, it also makes it a little cushier. And I like it. I don't mind it. But that's not where they're getting a lot of heat. And I, pun intended, they're getting heat on the cooling of the laptop. Now, this, to understand what's going on here, you have to understand how modern processors work. In the old days, you say, well, you've got a, 9 megahertz processor or 100 megahertz processor. That's a P90, a Pentium 90 megahertz. And that was its clock speed. But starting about 10 years ago, Intel started to add something they called speed step, the ability of a processor to speed up and slow down it could speed up to quickly handle, you know, high demand tasks and then slow down to its nominal speed to save power. And the range can be quite broad. This i9 processor ranges from 2.9 gigahertz, that's its nominal speed, to something like, I think it was 4.2 gigahertz. It can get very, very fast. And the idea is it gives you power when you need it and battery savings when you don't. And of course, when you take an existing design and you put which was designed really for 2 and 4 core processors, and you put 6 cores in it, that's how Intel's been making its processors faster, by the way. They haven't really been able to improve the speed. They've hit something called Moore's Law, really, which is, Moore's Law for a long time said that the processors would double in power every 18 months. That the end of Moore's Law has happened, really. Intel's just been stuck. Can't get much over 4 gigahertz, can't get much smaller than 10 nanometers. Can't actually get to 10 nanometers have been kind of a challenge. That's the size of the 10 billionths of a meter, the size of the electrical lines inside these processors. 10 nanometers is pretty small, and it's just difficulty getting that small. So the way they've sped up their processors, because there is demand, you know, every year people want something faster and better. We're used to that, is by adding more processors to a single chip. So now these i9 processors have 6 discrete processors in one chip. But that's a lot more heat, right? That's 50% more heat being generated. And so normally, if you see these other companies' i9 computers, they're designed to dissipate heat. They look like jet engines, big fans, and Apple didn't change anything, you know? And so people have been concerned that the i9 processor may end up not running at full speed most of the time because the cooling's not there. And it's very difficult to be sure you're getting what you think you're getting. By the way, this is not the only company that has problems with this. A lot of PC enthusiasts don't buy the Intel i7 chips for the same reason. They say, well, you know, you're not really getting what you're paying for. Because of thermal problems, you're throttling that processor to a speed below that of an i5, the middle-range Intel processor. Don't get the fancier processor. You'll never see its full potential. And that might even be more true with the i9. Well, I have to tell you, I'm seeing interesting results. I think there is a certain group of people who love to jump on Apple and just can't wait to say, oh, you blew it, Apple. See, overpriced hardware for, you know, the only people who buy Macintosh are fools who believe the marketing hype. And I don't quite go along with that one. I got this on Thursday. For the last couple of days, I've been taxing it, working it, trying different things. And it pretty much, as I used it in most normal uses, even watching movies, even having several browser windows open, a movie going, other things going on, it always stayed well above its minimum speed, 2.9 gigahertz, and much above. It was really fast. I like to write software. That's one reason that Apple developed a faster processor or a faster laptop, because they want people to write software, and software compiles faster, much, about 50% faster. Apple's claiming in some cases a 70% improvement in speed. And then earlier today, I really taxed it. I started rendering a 360-degree video, and then I saw what people were talking about. And this is actually not surprising. If you do a sustained high-energy thing, the processor is going to get pretty hot, and it's going to start to throttle. It's going to slow down to protect itself. It doesn't want to get maybe above 100 degrees centigrade. It doesn't want to get to the boiling point, literally. So it slows down to keep itself cool. The fans aren't enough to keep it cool. I'm a little concerned because when I did run this test, yeah, I saw what people were talking about. But, of course, I was compressing video for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, and then I would see the processor really say, oh, I can't. I know you need me, but I can't do it. I'm I'm out of gas. But now, ever since I did that, I'm seeing behavior that I hadn't seen before, even if it's just sitting here. So now I'm really confused. Now, I'm just looking at this. I was prepared to come in today and say, you know what? It's a myth. It's not a problem. Of course, if you work really, the processes are really hard, it's going to slow down. But I hadn't, for the first 2 days, seen it drop below its nominal rate until I really taxed it. Well, now, it's not doing anything. It's just sitting here. The CPU is barely in use. Utilization is around 10%. And the processor is running at about half its nominal speed. It's actually really slow, and I don't know what happened. I rebooted it, and it's still doing it. Did I break the processor? What happened? So now I'm very confused. I'm using a tool Intel provides called the Power Gadget, and last night they pulled it off. Now, you can't get it anymore. I happened to have it before, so I'm trusting the Power Gadget, but maybe Intel pulled it down because there's a bug. On the other hand, maybe they pulled it down because they didn't like the bad press. Or Apple said, we don't like the bad press. I don't know. But I also use something called iStat Menus, which is a long-time Apple tool that shows you CPU frequency. And it's showing the CPU running below its normal rate. The normal rate, again, it's supposed to be no less than 2.9 gigahertz. Right now, it's 1.87. And then up to 2.6. And then down to 2.4. It's all over the place. And I'm not doing anything. So you know what? I was all ready to come in here and say, oh, you know, fear not. This i9, it's really fast. In the normal run-of-the-mill things, everything will be faster. When you really need it, you know, you probably want to turn the fans up if you can. There are tools that will let you turn the fans to maximum. And yeah, it's probably, as any thin laptop, portable device, not ideal for half-hour, you know, big rendering of video, that kind of stuff. You might want to go to a desktop computer if you want that, which has better cooling. So I'm ready to say that, but now I'm kind of concerned. I feel like I broke my processor. I've rebooted it. Let me reboot it again. It's now not getting up to 2.9 gigahertz at all. I don't know what happened. Maybe I overheated the thermal paste that's normally used to attach it to the heatsink. Maybe I just broke it. Maybe the CPU reporting mechanisms are different. It's very hard to tell. So my advice just changed over the last 2 minutes. I was going to say, yes, this is great. It's fast. It is hot. It runs very hot. When it's really working, it's almost too hot to touch. But that's because it's got an aluminum body that's also dissipating heat right where the CPU is. But now I'm really wondering, what's going on? Why are you doing this to me? Very odd. Very odd. And I have to say, you know, if you're buying a very pricey, this is well over $4,000, because you want that fast chip, and the chip does not operate at its normal speed, let alone a faster speed, then you shouldn't buy it. So now I'm really wondering, and I'm not going to be the definitive answer to this. We're going to have to watch and see what people better than I, who have more experience testing this stuff, maybe see what Intel says. Maybe they've got an updated Power Gadget that's going to be more accurate. But as of right now, it's hard to recommend spending extra for an i9 when it's underperforming an i5. Yikes. So the controversy continues. 8888 Ask Leo. I wanted to bring you good news today, and I don't. It's not. It's oddly mixed. It's baffling, frankly. It shouldn't be slowing down at all right now. It's not even warm. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk high tech. Not just Macs. We can talk about anything. Give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. You know who gets here long before anyone else? Works hard to gather phone calls so that this show can operate smoothly.
I think today it was about 5 minutes, not 30 seconds.
She beat me by five, folks.
5 minutes.
Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Welcome. We got a full board here, but who should we... And by the way, I should mention, did you know... We're going to keep recording calls after the show today.
I'm aware.
We're going to stick around for a little bit because we're recording ahead for vacation time, as I like to do. I like to give people fresh shows instead of reruns. So Rich DeMuro will come in for one weekend, and I'm going to have a couple of pre-recorded shows. So we will be pre-recording phone calls, so keep the calls going after the show gets off the air in about 2.5 hours.
Absolutely.
Now, who should I start with?
I don't know. Can I ask you a question?
Oh, yeah.
So I like to go see live music, and I went last night to a concert, and what I've noticed...
Yes, I am an AC/DC. People, I don't... That's my day job, but not a lot of people know about it. Yeah, I'm taking over as lead singer. It's, you know, just a something I'd like to do. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I always knew that was your hidden.
Rock and roll ain't noise pollution.
So the artists wear the inner ear monitors, right?
Because they
get the nice mixes.
And IEMs.
You have them too, for some of your shows as well.
Yeah.
But what I notice with all these artists is they rip them out, like, right away. They don't even use them. Do you know why they do that?
Yes.
Like 90% of the time.
I know, and
get
it's
distracted,
bad.
So I don't know what the point of them ever having
I remember
them
seeing
is
Bono do that. Because you, most of these inner ear monitors, and you can, you know, I mean, we're not talking Apple earbuds. These are things that kind of go deeply into your ear.
And they're very expensive.
The ones I have are kind of similar to the ones rock stars use, and they're $1,000 a pair because they want accurate sound reproduction. So they're very good headphones, but you can't hear what's going on around you. Now, if you're a rock star, it's probably a good idea to have ear protection.
Mm-hmm.
But they like to hear the audience scream.
Is that what it is? Okay.
And they like to hear what their bandmates are saying, and you can't.
Right.
You'll notice I pull them out because you can't hear anything going on around you. You just hear what's coming in through the headphones.
And as somebody who's never used them, I've noticed that at like 90% of the concerts, they're in there to begin with, and then they just rip them out, and they don't even have them in the rest of the show.
I bet you they put them in when they need to sing accurately. That's when you want to wear them. The guitarists don't need them. The drummer doesn't need them, but they should wear them for ear protection.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll get a better mix than the stage monitors, you know.
Right.
But, I think some of it might be vanity, some of it might be coolness, and some of it might just be, you know, they want to hear what's going on. They want to hear the roar of the crowd.
All right. That makes sense. Thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah, I love them, but they are very expensive. And I use ones that are made by, you know, the original was Ultimate Ears, and the guy who created Ultimate Ears left and started his own, I think it's JH Audio, and those are the ones I use. I love them. They sound really good. And they're not too obtrusive. Hey, we're going to take a break. We'll get your first call in a bit. Scott Wilkinson's also coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, it might be. I'm now thinking because the battery's so low. It's plugged in, but it's not plugged into something that's enough to charge it. Let me see where my battery is. It's 25%. That should be enough so it doesn't have to throttle, right? I've rebooted. And I'm still, well, you know, I broke it. I think I broke my laptop. That is not good. So this is the CPU frequency, and even though there's six of them, for some reason it only tells you one at a time. This is power. You see, it's not using very much power, and maybe it is in a low power mode. So maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. This is the temperature. You see, it's not very warm. It's 48 degrees. This is utilization. It's around 10%. And for some reason, the clock speed is that was 1.5, 1.4, 1.5. It's supposed to be 2.9. It's well below. In fact, it hasn't even crossed. All right, I'm going to plug it in and charge it all up all the way. I'm hoping that's what it is. That's crazy. If it doesn't get better, I'm taking it back. Are they idling? Maybe that's it. Okay, let me. So I was watching Netflix, right? Oh yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's because it's just idling. There you go. That's a good point. Scooter X, you're right. It's maybe just because it's just not doing anything. Let me, because it peaked up as soon as I. You know what I'm going to do here? Let's do. Let's compile something here real quick. Not the most efficient compiler, I'm sure. It's really a student language, but let me open up. Okay, so this searches through the dictionary, the Mac dictionary, and creates a list of all the, let's see, what should I do? Most frequent, okay. So normally on iMac Pro, this takes 27 seconds. So this is a pretty hefty little thing. Let me just real quickly run this. Let me run it, and let's watch what happens here. Actually, and let me time it, too, as long as we're doing it. Okay, now it's running a fairly... Well, the utilization is still 8%, so I don't know. I wonder if there's a problem with this, the Intel Power Gadget. They pulled it off last night. They said, no, they can't download it. On the other hand, I'm getting the same thing from iStat Menu, right? Okay, Dr. Racket was using 99%. Oh, it's done. It's done. So, you know what? Look at that. You're right, Scooter X. So when it needed it, it went up to 4 gigahertz plus, 4.2 gigahertz. Let's do it again. Let's run it. Let's run her again, see what happens. So, yeah. So there it is. It's going up again because it needs it, right? So maybe that's it. It's just idling to save juice.
Can I get my code?
Bump, dear bump. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's that time for Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Now, this is why this stuff is so complicated. I'm going to defer on whether the MacBook Pro is a good choice with the i9 or not to some of the real tech blogs like Non-Tech to do their benchmarks because they know what they're doing. Scooter X in the chat room pointed out that if I shut everything down, the processor is going to go down real slow just to save juice because you're not doing anything. So I fired up a compiler, compiled a program and ran it that goes through all the dictionary. And yeah, the processor went right up to 4.0 gigahertz as long as it was needed. Thermals went up a little bit. Fan does go up, but it did it. And it did it quicker. In fact, I'm looking at the time it took to do it. It was about the same amount of time as on an iMac Pro with 10 cores. So not bad. Not bad. This is why you shouldn't listen to anybody, a YouTuber or Leo. Let's wait and find out what the results are. The question is, of course, is it worth getting the i9 in a MacBook Pro? And I think if you want, you know, some real throughput in a kind of bursty way, no question. That's what you'll get. Sustained throughput, maybe not. Anyway, I don't want to use up your precious minutes, Scott Wilkinson. I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
It's an important topic.
Yeah. I just wanted to kind of address what I may have mistakenly said minutes ago.
Oh, you're an honorable fellow.
And you know, don't trust me. Because I clearly don't know what I'm doing.
No, I do trust you because if you find yourself in error, you correct it.
Oh, yeah, I always do want to correct it, of course. And absolutely. I know you do the same. Yeah, absolutely.
No one's perfect. No one gets it right all the time. So if you're willing to correct yourself, then as I am too, I get plenty of stuff wrong. But if I do and I find it, somebody points it out and proves it to me, I'll cop to it right away.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking now at it looks like it's responding when I need it to, and it can get to a high speed. It's the real question, I guess, is should you get this if you want to render long videos? And I would say probably not. You probably want a desktop because it is going to slow down as the processor does heat up. It's protecting itself, and that's what it's made to do. And really, right. I guess the question is, did Apple design enough cooling into this? And if you want it to look this good, if you look
that thin,
you're not going to be able to do that. That if you look at the i9 laptops from other manufacturers that do provide cooling, they're ugly as sin. They look like jet engines because they're blowing a lot of air. Anyway, what do you want to talk about today, Mr. W?
I've got a letter here, an email from Paul Konigsberg, who has an old stereo.
Some of those old stereos are so good looking.
Nice. It's an old Sony amplifier and a pair of Sansui speakers. You remember those?
Yeah.
And he's a violin player, and he wants to play along, but he wants to play music from modern sources like his phone and so on. So can he get something that connects to his old stereo that lets him play music from his phone, also from his NAS, his network attached storage, which is from Synology. I'm sure you know that name.
Oh yeah.
And he says he doesn't necessarily want to use Bluetooth because he thinks that might be poorer quality than Wi-Fi. And yeah, maybe, possibly a little bit, but Bluetooth is easier to deal with. There are tons of these little adapters that basically have an audio output. You plug it into your Sans or your Sony receiver. And it'll receive Bluetooth and play it over that system. Amazon Basics makes one for $20. Harman Kardon makes one for $60, the BTA-10. Wirecutter thought their best pick was the StarTech BT-2A, which is $50 or $60, depending on where you get it. Monoprice makes one. And these are not expensive, so it might be worth trying. Now, I did find a few that do work over Wi-Fi, and the most common example, of course, is Google Chromecast Audio.
Which I love, and they have an optical out of that.
Yeah.
So you get good, all the digital stuff. Of course, he won't have optical on that old receiver.
Well, I don't know. It depends on how old that receiver is. Optical's been around a while, don't forget.
Toslink,
yeah, exactly. So... Google Chromecast is $35.
I use Chromecast Audio everywhere, and I really like it.
Yeah. There's also a company called Pyle, P-Y-L-E. I don't know if you've heard of that company or not. Mm-hmm. I have in the pro audio world. I've got, in fact, a Pyle microphone mixer, which is one of their pro audio products. But they make a wireless audio receiver for $50 that is Wi-Fi. I was looking at a couple others on Amazon, one called from a company called Eider, I-D-E-R, and another one called from Forus. This one's actually been recommended a couple places, P-H-O-R-U-S, Forus PR5 for $50.
These are all Wi-Fi solutions.
These are all Wi-Fi solutions.
Some I'm kind of with him. Bluetooth, I feel like, is they compress the audio so they can get it over a smaller bandwidth.
Correct. And that can very easily lead to poor sound quality. For example, I have yet to find a Bluetooth earpiece for my phone that sounds any good at all.
Yeah.
So, he may very well be right that the Bluetooth isn't the way to go if you want good quality.
There is a newer standard. For stereo, we use A2DP, but there's a newer aptX standard. But so few phones support aptX.
Right.
And he'd have to have an aptX receiver and sender. So
plus the fact that he wants to get music from his Synology NAS.
Right.
And the only way to do that really is over your Wi-Fi network, particularly if you need to have a device that is probably DLNA compatible. That, I believe, stands for Digital Living Network Alliance or something like that. Anyway, it's a standard by which media files can get shared between devices on a network.
Yeah.
And it's a very common standard, but you need to make sure that whatever device you get does that, supports that, I should say, so that you can get music from your NAS as well as from your phone or tablet or wherever else you want it to come from.
Okay.
So there's
a good solution.
I think one of those solutions, Google Chromecast, if his receiver has an optical audio input, then that's a great solution. Otherwise, this pile or the forest would be excellent solutions.
Yeah, yeah. 90 so, seconds you go. Left. You got any, have you seen any good movies lately?
Oh, the last one I saw was Ant-Man and the Wasp, and that was great.
Is that an Atmos?
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah. Because the Wasp Atmos. And the Ant-Man, when they're flying around.
They fly all around. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm looking forward to The Meg. Do you know about this movie?
I am looking forward to it, too. It's about a giant shark, a megalodon.
And the one reason I'm looking forward to it is I actually performed on the score.
What? Are you doing the tuba?
Nope. It's kind of like Jaws, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I was hired to play seashell trumpet.
Conch.
Conch.
He's our exactly. Conch man on the Conch man. It's Scott Wilkinson laying down the seashell tunes.
And it makes total sense.
I want to see it. Know? So where should I listen for your conch?
Well, it's actually part of the main theme.
Nice.
So
the trailer looks hysterical.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of fun. Jason Statham and Rainn Wilson. I think I'll probably. It looks like a good summer movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But now that I know the conch player, I'm there, man. You'll find Scott Wilkinson at the AVS Forum. He's editor there, and his writing is fantastic. All about audio, all about video, movies too. It is a great site for anybody who's into this stuff. And Scott joins us every week. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
We will go to the phones, and I'll explain what happened with my I-9 review when we come back. Yeah, see, now I realized the whole time that I was looking at it all the last 2 days, I had Lightroom in the background updating. Now it is running reliably because Lightroom's updating. I've got a movie on Netflix running. It's running well over its nominal. It's running reliably almost at 4 gigahertz. And while it is a little warm, it's not throttling. So it is able to do, I've got Lightroom in the background, and it's able to do a lot of stuff all at the same time. So I was, Scooter X, thank you for saying, you're right. It was not being used, so of course the CPU speed went down to save battery. It is a little hot. It's 89 degrees. But the fans are working, and it's not too hot to touch. So that's the good news. If you're buying an i9 because you want it to be able to do a lot of things simultaneously, watch movies, download right Lightroom, go through pictures, all of that stuff, it's fast. That's a great job. So anyway, off we go to Scott Wilkinson land. Sorry to...
Woo-hoo.
Continue to eat into your time.
Hey, that's no problem. Hey, listen, when are your vacation weekends? Just so
yeah, we'll want to pre-record.
Exactly.
I am not going to be here on 9192, 9899, 915, 916, 922, and 923. But Rich will be here on the 15th, 16th, and the last four shows. So we will pre-record two episodes. And we'd like to do that Saturday, August 18th and 19th, or Sunday the 19th, if we can. But if not, we can do it somewhere else.
That shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. So plan on either the 18th or the 19th of August. And then you won't have to do anything on the 1st through the 15th. But Rich will be here on the 15th and the 22nd for you.
I won't have to do anything on the 1st and the 8th.
Right. 1st and the 8th. 15th right.
And
the 22nd,
which is okay because it's unfortunate in a way because the 8th will be at the end of Cedia, and I normally give a Cedia report.
Well, you'll have to do it with Rich. Show, I think this happened last time, as a matter of fact.
Well, I was with you last time.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm basically pre-recording, and I'm off on the 1st and the 8th.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Great.
Thank you.
All yours for another 99 seconds.
Okay. So Emily the Strange, her swimming earbuds are pile. That's interesting. I didn't know they made earbuds, particularly swimming earbuds. I had no idea there was such a thing even. That's kind of amazing, actually, to think you could put earbuds that play music, that have some electronics in them, in your ears while you're swimming. What?
What the what?
What the what?
There are actually quite a few waterproof headphones now.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's very popular.
Amazing. Emily the Strange, you have a fascination with underwater noise. She remembers one time on the podcast before the show started, I showed everybody my fossilized whale inner ear. So, I am kind of interested in underwater noise. That's for sure. For audio things, are Amazon Basics brand decent enough? Who makes their hardware? Emily asks, and I don't know. I've never actually tried any of them. I mean, certainly their cables are fine. I have no trouble. I've bought Amazon Basics cables before. I have no trouble with that at all. As far as electronics, I honestly don't know. I have never tried them before. Marsworm, did I hear about James Gunn, a director of Guardians of the Galaxy, got fired from Disney because of offensive tweets? Yes, I did hear that. That was quite unfortunate, in my opinion, particularly the way it went. And I'm not going to talk about it here because it's political.
You going to stick around for the top of the hour?
Sure, happy to.
All right, thanks, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, now one more time I'm going to talk about this I-9 because I have to say I think I blew it. It shows you how difficult this stuff is to do. I'm now running through – one of the reasons I wanted a faster processor on the MacBook Pro is because Lightroom is the photo tool I use from Adobe, and it's a notorious – well, forgive me – pig. It is slow, and on many of the laptops I've used, it's just unusable. I've had to download third-party programs to import and review the giant RAW files I take with my camera. Here's the good news. When I'm using Lightroom to review pictures, they're very snappy, much faster than it is on any other slower Intel-based computer that I've got, Windows or Mac. I'm looking at the CPU frequency, and it's staying well above its nominal frequency, 3.4 gigahertz, 3.5 gigahertz. Nominal, again, is 2.9 gigahertz. It's doing exactly what you want it to do. And did I mention I'm also running a Netflix movie in the background while I'm doing that? So I think in many of the normal uses people will want, this i9 processor will be fine. Yeah, it gets hot. It's almost 85 degrees, and the metal on the case right below the screen is almost too hot to touch. It's pretty warm. I can tell you it's 42 degrees on the outside Celsius. So it's pretty warm. Nevertheless, everything's working. The processor's performing well above the nominal speed. It's not throttled down. So I'm getting the throughput I expected. So let me go back to what I originally was going to say before I began the show and saw those strange results. The processor seems to be doing exactly what it wants, what you would want it to do. It's giving you extra juice when you need it. I imagine if you're somebody who is using Final Cut or Premiere to edit videos, if you're editing 4K videos or 360-degree videos, and you're doing big, long, half-hour renders, that's not an ideal use for it. I've seen it throttle and slow down. But I would imagine almost anything would, even an i5. Those are the kinds of things you want maybe a desktop computer for. Don't expect massive improvements in speed for sustained hard work like that. On the other hand, for the stuff that I do and for what most people do, writing software, compiling code, editing pictures, That's what we call bursty. You need some power. You need some CPU cycles for 10, 15, 20 seconds. It gives you that, slows back down. It seems to do exactly what it's supposed to do. The fans are fairly audible. I don't know if you can hear them. I'll put it up next to the microphone. So, you know, there's some fan noise, but you'd expect that. That's trying to keep this processor cool. And we don't know what the long-term effects of the high temperatures the processor is operating at will be. But I guess, at least for now, I'm going to have to say it looks like it's performing as you would expect. And it's giving me the extra performance I was looking for in photo editing. And in other respects, it's a really nice machine. 32 gigs of RAM. You can get up to 4 terabyte hard drive, although that will cost you a pretty penny. I've got just the simple 1 terabyte in here. That's more than enough for me. And a very fast i9 processor that seems to be doing what it's supposed to be doing. 8888 Ask Leo. Now we get to the phones. Let's go to line one. Old chef guy, my buddy Richard. Hi, Richard.
Hi there.
It's great.
Hi, greetings.
Great to talk to you again. Haven't talked to you in ages. What's up?
I've been working. You know, some of us work regular hours.
Oh, that. Although Anthony Bourdain says, never work brunch. Never work brunch.
I was a chef for 20 years, and I did brunch. So when I saw him talk about that very thing, I thought, it's so true. Nobody wants to cook eggs. Nobody likes cooking eggs.
You don't get eggs famous making omelets. Nope.
No. I used to go through 3 cases of eggs on a Sunday morning.
Oh,
it was
man.
Just mind-numbing. Oh, I didn't eat eggs for 5 years. But that's not why we're here. I have a question I bought a 2015 Ford Fusion Energy.
Ah, yes. The Energies are their all battery, right?
They're plug-in.
Oh, they're the plug-in hybrids. Okay.
So it's a hybrid plug-in.
Yeah. All right.
And I have a Google Pixel XL2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have maps in the car because it's Sync 2. Not Sync 3, and I won't pay them the $1,500 upgrade.
No, and you have a GPS on your phone that does a really good job.
Does a really great job, but it'd sure be fun to see my screen, my phone, cast to the screen in the dash.
Yeah.
And I do have RCA connectors inside my glove box.
So the way most people will do this is with what we call Android Auto, and Apple has its own version of this.
Yeah.
And that is a car designed to do it, and many newer cars do it, all the Hondas and so forth. I guess that Ford does not. So
Sync 2 instead of Sync 3.
Yeah. So that screen, you said you have RCA cables. Can you put some video on that screen? Is that possible? Or do you want to have a separate screen?
No. I'm currently using the separate screen, using the Pixel as everything because it's so much smarter than the Sync.
Right.
But I would like to be able to project the maps onto this bigger screen if possible. But is it an MA? And I have the adapter. I have a Type-C adapter to HDMI and then a HDMI to RCA. And I got all that before I found out that evidently the Pixel XL2 doesn't give me MHL. Could I use more acronyms? Is that possible?
MHL is what would power the Pixel while you're displaying the video out of it. You don't have HDMI out, in other words.
Correct, yeah.
Huh. So you want to know, how do I get the video out of that? Yeah, that's a really interesting question. The Pixel 2 is a Type-C port. You can get audio out of it, I know, because there are Type-C headphones for it. Of course, it's a charging port, but you're saying it doesn't have any video coming out of it.
Correct.
Hmm. I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, no. But, I stumped you. I hate
that. Well, it's not that you stumped. Yeah, you did stump me because I don't know. If it doesn't have video, it doesn't have video. I mean, that's not an unusual thing not to have, is video out of that Type-C connector. You know, that's up to the manufacturer to provide it.
Right.
Yeah. In which case, it's too bad you bought all that stuff.
Well, they're just connectors. I can send them. I mean, they're not horrible. It's under $50, yeah, so I'm not horrified.
HDMI out. Let me just see if there's... it looks... ways to connect the Pixel 2 to a TV.
Can you imagine some weird way that I could use a Chromecast? Because I do have USB ports. I could cast to the Chromecast and somehow through the USB port get that into the dash?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why... That's exactly... But let me look here, because I'm looking at an article. USB-C to HDMI, no, not an option. So, there isn't a way to get HDMI out of that Type-C connector. So it looks like Chromecast is going to be. I'll tell you what, I have an article I found here from techlector.com. You can Google it as well. Best ways to connect Google Pixel 2 to TV. And they describe a number of different ways to do it. Now, TV is not quite what you have, but since you have an RCA jack that does display on that screen, I think you can do it. You'd need a Chromecast. You'd need to convert the Chromecast. Boy, that, you know, that's a tricky one because I don't know if the Chromecast would say, well, I don't. Is that a TV? What am I connected to?
What am I connected to?
Might confuse the Chromecast. Yeah, but you can cast the you can cast anything from the screen of the Pixel 2, so you can send it to that Chromecast, and the Chromecast is the problem. Is no, it's not going to work because the Chromecast gets now. Get this. All you're doing with a device that connects to a Chromecast is telling the Chromecast, you go get the signal over Wi-Fi and display it. You're not actually casting to the Chromecast. The Chromecast has to have Wi-Fi for it to work. So that is.
Can I work around that by creating my own hotspot?
You got a hotspot. It's getting crazy in here. Ooh, it's getting hot in here. My CPU's at 100%. But yes, I think you could. That's going to really get crazy because now your phone is both a hotspot and video. All I can say is, hey, give it a try.
Good luck.
I'll put a link in the show notes to this article that might give you some other ideas for getting video out of your Pixel 2. Old Chef Guy, great to talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the old tech guy. Wow. That's interesting. That is a complicated one, Richard. I mean, in theory, that should work. You hotspot to the Chromecast.
Right, but do you think it's going to make the phone run too hot? I don't want to damage the phone, because I've been watching you have heat scares on your...
Yeah, no, you won't damage it.
Okay.
Read this article, because I think there are other ways that you could get a Miracast dongle that wouldn't require... that would then take the screen, because... you actually want the screen. You can't do maps over a Chromecast. So the way the Chromecast... Yeah.
Okay.
You actually want the screen. So, look at this
tech... Miracast dongle. Wow, okay.
Yeah, Miracast dongle would do it. Okay. I think. I don't know. This is crazy.
Well, like I said, I believe part of the issue is that I'm on Sync 2, and if I upgraded to Sync 3, then it has Android Auto...
Yeah, that solves it right there.
But it's worth the cash. Jeez.
Yeah, I know. I use the audio prompts anyway, not the picture. So I just, you know what, the best thing, get a little dashboard mount for your phone and just have it up there. And that's what all the Uber people do, right? They're looking at their phone and they're using the audio cues.
I thought about mounting my Pixel C.
Oh, the tablet. Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, you could totally do that. That's a good idea. That'd be better.
The phone is so much smarter than the Sync.
Well, and does your C have wireless connectivity?
Yes.
Okay. So you got the LTE C. Yeah. That would work. You could mount it. You can get suction cup mounts that with a vice grip that will hold a tablet or your phone. Suction cup it. You got to be careful with the California laws. They don't like you to block the windshield.
Oh, yeah. But I could just put it on the LCD screen built into the dash. I could suction cup it there.
Yeah, because you don't need that anymore.
I don't need that anymore because it doesn't really give me any value. I don't need to monitor what the EN engine is doing on the screen. I'm just trying to get maps.
I like it.
You know, have a good interface.
I like it. I think that's by. And what are you doing with that C anyway? Nothing, probably, right?
I love my C. I'm in such a bad mood about it not being upgraded. It's my favorite tablet.
They dumped it. They decided that the Chrome OS was going to be the tablet OS, not Android.
I hate that about Google.
I do too.
Product.
They really, you know, it's what big companies do. Unfortunately,
I'm looking at a stack of I have my Nexus 10. I have my Nexus 7. I still have the old 7. And they're just like DBO. It's sad.
I know. Welcome to Silicon Valley. The soap opera.
Now go home.
Thank
you.
Hey, take care. Right. Great to talk to you, Richard. Bye-bye.
You too.
So this, I'm watching this, and we're going to get to Scott in a second. But it is absolutely handling Now I realize what I always had Lightroom in the background running. And so it was always running the CPU. And it never had a problem. Just running it hot all that time. All right, Scott. Now we come back to the fabulous Scott Wilkinson. And you have 313
seconds. 300
seconds? It's like 5 minutes.
Woo.
Woo.
That's, I'll take it.
All right.
Okay. So, hey, everybody. So glad to see you. Always glad to be with you. Somebody asked me earlier about, Miller Tech. What's the best budget soundbar under $200? That's actually a good question and a little bit difficult to answer. In our roundup last year, we did the Polk Magnify Mini. That's $250. So it's a little over 200, but it's really very good. Yamaha makes some good ones. I had said in the chat room that Vizio was the first place I'd go for low-cost soundbars, and it still is. But you might also look at Yamaha. I think the YAS-107, they might have a 108 now. That was last year. We reviewed the 207, which is $300, and that got a recommended sticker, as did the Polk Magnify Mini. The Samsung, they're now we're starting to get a little more expensive. And then there's the Sony HTST-5000, which I spoke about a couple weeks ago for $1,500. but in any event, I'd say Vizio, or if you can stretch a little bit, the Polk Magnify Mini is certainly really good. As is the Yamaha, you might look at the 107 instead of the 207, or maybe they're eights now. Let's see. Hey, Tech William, good to see you there, man. We were also talking. Oh, Graveyard Tube was asking about the temperature here. Yeah, I live in Burbank, and man, oh man, 2 weeks ago it got well over 110, and this week coming up looks like it's going to do the same thing. So lovely. Just stay inside with air conditioning. Hope the power doesn't go out. We were talking also, Miller Tech and a couple people were talking about these new Roku wireless TV speakers. Basically, instead of it's a replacement and an alternative to a soundbar. Put two speakers on your credenza or whatever, and you get better stereo separation than you do from a soundbar. The problem is that they only work with Roku TVs. And the only companies that make those are TCL, Hisense, RCA, Philips, and then a couple of captive brands, Insignia and Element. These speakers don't even work with the standalone Roku boxes, you know, the little receivers. And that was a mistake, in my opinion. Okay, so they're made by Roku. They should only work with Roku products. I get that. But if they don't work with a set-top box, then that's shooting themselves in the foot, in my opinion. So that's the answer to that question. Hail Caesar, what's the best soundbar between 308 and 327? Yeah, well, you know. And Sean just asked the same question. What do I think? TCL's new Roku TV wireless speakers. Well, they aren't TCL. They're made by Roku. They work with TCL Roku TVs, but you have to have a Roku TV, which by definition is a TV with the Roku built in. Now, that's great. They're really good. I love the Roku user interface, and the selection of streaming services is vast. So it's a great way to go, but these speakers only work there. Lawn Dog, what happened to all the 27-inch TVs? Yeah, they're now monitors. They're now computer monitors. 27-inch TV, yeah, I think the smallest TV, well, I think you can get 20, I think it's possible to get 27 and even 19-inch TVs. Like, people still put TVs in their kitchen, don't they? That's what you'd want in there. But I think I certainly don't look at anything Well, I don't look at anything below 50 inches because I'm a big screen guy, and that's what AVS Forum is about.
Yeah, but for a kitchen, I think 42.
But for a kitchen, yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Have a good one. See ya. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We talk about smartwatches. We talk about CPUs, GPUs, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number if you want to talk high tech. And I really feel bad now because I was suckered. I was fooled. I misunderstood, misread the CPU readings on this i9. I just want to reiterate that the i9 MacBook Pro does, for me, exactly what I wanted it to do, and it handles quite well the heavy-duty tasks that I want to throw at it, particularly as a developer, as a programmer. Might not be ideal for compressing video or 360 video, but it sure does the stuff I want it to do, and it's been running consistently at almost 4 gigahertz for the last 45 minutes without any thermal slowdowns, without any throttling. It's really done a good job. So I think this is overblown, and it just underscores how hard it is to understand this stuff. Unless this is your business, and there are some websites like a non-tech and PC perspective that it's their business. They do this stuff all the time. Unless it's your business, it's very easy to misread these numbers and misunderstand it. And I think that's unfortunate because Apple's getting a little bit of a bad rap from a number of YouTubers primarily who are saying, oh, this thing is this is not doing what it's supposed to do. Well, I think it is. I think it is. It's expensive. There's no doubt about that. 8888 Ask Leo. Now, we got to get some calls here. Let's go to Sarah in Hutchinson, Kansas. Been holding on for an hour. Thank you for your patience. Welcome.
Hello,
hi, Sarah.
Leo.
Hi.
I'm actually friends with your wife on Pokemon Go now.
Ah, yeah, thank you. That's awesome.
When you put out her information, I went ahead and friended her.
She now has 200 friends. One of them is you. That's awesome, Sarah. Do you play? You must.
I do. We play as a family. We like to go out and walk around the neighborhood.
It's
and play
really
and...
fun as a family. You know what kills us?
It is.
You know, my wife and I are 12-year-olds, but our 15-year-old won't play anymore. He says, oh, no, I'm done with that. Which, aww. We had so much fun 2 years ago when it came out. And the reason this came up, Sarah knows this, but I'll tell the rest of you, is because the folks who do Pokemon Go, Niantic, updated it considerably over the last 6 months and really brought back a lot of the fun of the game. You can have friends, for one thing, and see where they go. So thank you, Sarah.
Yeah,
that's nice.
If she gets any gifts from Kansas, then she knows where it's going.
I'll say, look for Sarah's gifts from Kansas. And I'm sure you'll be getting some Petaluma gifts as well. That's nice. Thank you, Sarah. Yeah. Lisa and I are now maxed out. You can only have 200 friends, and so we both do, unfortunately. So no more, no new friends. What's your favorite Pokemon?
I'm a Pikachu fan.
Me too.
I always love Pikachu.
This has been a good summer for Pikachu fans. Lots of Pikachus in sun hats. That's right. Now I'm playing it, by the way. If I get a little distracted, it's because I see a Venonat. I've just got to pick him up. What can I do for you, Sarah?
Well, I bought a used MacBook. It's a 2010, so I know it's quite old, but we upgraded the RAM and put in an SSD hard drive.
Good upgrades.
What I'm concerned about is when Mojave comes out, do I go from High Sierra to Mojave, or am I better off staying with an older OS?
The general rule is if Apple lets you do it, Apple will at some point cut it off, and you won't, and it'll just say, sorry, you know, this is the most recent you can use, but you should upgrade if you can. The good news is, in the last 8 years, it's an 8-year-old laptop, but Intel hasn't made massive improvements in processors, and so you're probably pretty compatible with anything Apple's doing right now.
Yeah, it runs High Sierra pretty well.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And so I think, yes, absolutely, go to Mojave. Mojave has some nice new features. You know, the main reason you want to do it is for any security and bug fixes that that are there. And Apple doesn't necessarily publicize those. So you always want to get the updates. But you don't have to worry. Apple won't let you update if it's not compatible or it's going to really slow your system down. They're pretty good about that. I like the older, you know, my real reluctance on upgrading to the new MacBook Pro, besides the price, was I really like the older MacBooks. I like the travel. I don't mind the bigger size. It's a little thicker. That's fine. Better battery life. And I like the keyboards. I don't like the touch bar all that much. They don't have a touch bar. So I was using a 2015 MacBook Pro until I got this new one. They're very good.
Yeah, I've been listening to your reviews. So
yeah.
When I go to get a new one, I'm going to wait till they get that keyboard worked out.
Well, I feel like this one's better. It's not, you know, we'll see if it's more reliable. I think they have solved that. And I was a big, as you know, hater of the new Butterfly keyboards. This one, it's just a slight difference, but it's enough to make me say, well, I think I can live with it. I'm not happy, but I think I can live with it. Your 2010's just fine. Stick with it. By the way, they stopped selling those when they put out these new MacBook Pros. That was it on the 2015, 15 inches. They're not selling those old ones anymore. So I don't know what will happen to the MacBook Air, which is the last really old MacBook, old-style MacBook they sell. But my sense is they're dropping that, too, sometime this year. Sarah, so nice to talk to you. I'll look for you. I'll look for some Hutchinson, Kansas pokey stops.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, the lending leader, Quicken Loans. They created, we've talked about it before, I hope you know, the best online mortgage approval process out there. But now they've taken another step, and I think it's so important, because interest rates now have started to go up. For years, you know, we had very flat interest rates. It was great. But I remember those days when you were home hunting a few years ago, and there was pressure to get that deal done because in a month the interest rates are going to go up, and then they're going to go up again, they're going to go up again. And that means even like a quarter point means in the long run lots of thousands of dollars extra for that house, you know. So it's really what they come up with is a great idea that's timely because the interest rates now are going back up. They call it rate shield approval. Let me tell you about it. So, you know, you go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. You go there and you can apply for your home loan. You can do it all on the phone. You don't have to go get paperwork or anything. They do it all for you. They call it the power buying process. They verify income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you verified approval. You choose the rate, the term, the down payment. Then they give you verified approval. That means you're as good as a cash buyer. Because when you go in and make an offer on a house, the seller knows, well, they're good for it. They've already got the loan. So that's a really big deal, and it's a great way to start. But here's how Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage takes the anxiety out of buying a house. Because once you're verified, then you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock out your rate for up to 90 days. They give you 3 months to shop, and they guarantee your rate, that's it. It won't go up. It could go down. If rates go down, and that could happen, they will ratchet your rate down, but they just will never go up. So it's a win either way, right? And it takes all the anxiety out of home shopping. You're good, you're approved, and your rate, you know your rate, you know exactly what's going to cost. This is the kind of thing you'd expect from America's best mortgage lender, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. I want you to try it. Go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Get Rate Shield approval. It's only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions, and additional exclusions or conditions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. And I thank you for patronizing them, so that they say, hey, this works, and they keep supporting the show. It all works. Thank you. On we go to line three. David in Escondido, California. Hi, David.
Hello, Leo. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for hanging on. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm caught between two tech companies that are telling me it's the other guy's fault.
Yeah, well, they'll always do that if they can.
So I'm a cord cutter on cable. I canceled my cable about 2 years ago. My current streaming service of choice is PlayStation View. And a couple days ago, I got an email from Cox, my internet service provider, saying that there was suspicious activity coming from my network that was indicative of maybe a bot attack or something.
Yeah.
So I gave Cox a call, and they immediately tried to sell me on a customer protection service package.
That Man.
$1 a month.
Now, if that's the reason they gave you that alert, that's reprehensible. But maybe there is something going on. Did they give you any more information?
Well, here's the interesting thing. The conversation got sort of sidetracked because evidently I've been paying for a basic version of the service package for years and I had no idea.
Oh, thank you, Cox. God, these companies are awful.
I know. So I went ahead and I canceled that, I called PlayStation View, and they kind of stepped me through a whole bunch of things, and we finally got to a solution. What was happening is I have it on two different Rokus in the house.
Hold on a second, because I have to take a break. Well, actually, sure. We got about a minute. If you want to give me a minute summary, then let's do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was getting an error, basically, that I was forbidden from accessing PlayStation View. All the other Roku channels were working fine.
Wow.
So I thought it probably had something to do with this email that I got from Cox.
That sounds like anti-competitive behavior. Of course, they don't like PlayStation View because you're playing Sony for access to the TV channels, not Cox. Uh-oh.
It was
Uh-oh. Now Cox is cutting your internet. Hang on the line. We're going to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You're fading in and out. The folks at Cox are pushing. They're mess with him. Mess with him. Wow. You're on a VoIP solution? You're on a wireless solution?
Yeah, I have T-Mobile.
T-Mobile, but you're T-Mobile Wi-Fi calling probably, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. So Cox said, "Man, he's talking about us." No, I don't want to be too paranoid. Sony said what? Because you have two Rokus, there's a problem?
Well, no, they were able to. We ended up it had something to do with it not being able to access my profile for PlayStation View. So they had me create a new profile, and that ended up fixing the issue. Now, I still have a problem because if I try to log on to PlayStation View's website to access my account, I can't access it. So the PlayStation View is telling me that that my ISP is blocking that IP address. And I'm not really sure how that works. But when I spoke to Cox about that, they said they don't have the ability, that they don't block IP addresses.
Well, that's wrong. They could totally block an IP address.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, they told me this in the second call to tech support. And when I told them about the email regarding the suspicious activity, they said they had no record of sending me that email.
Oh. Well, it could be spoofed. There's no reason that's not spoofed. Although, the phone number in the email, is it actually Cox?
It is actually Cox. It does reference the...
Because a spammer or somebody out to get you would not... They would say they're Cox, but the phone number would be somebody else.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure. It was pretty sophisticated. It was. There were a couple links to download Malwarebytes or go to Microsoft Defender. I didn't click on them, obviously.
Well, it could have been you. That was spoof email.
Yeah. The first conversation I had with Cox Tech Support, they told me that there was an issue with my internet service. They said there's something on the line that's zero. And they were reading it at 1,000. Second time I called, they said the internet was working fine. So I'm getting conflicting information. Huh. But ultimately, what I'm allowed to do is find out how do I get them or get somebody to unblock the IP address so I can access PlayStation via their website if I need to change my password or
why would it be blocked?
Even cancel.
Well, so it could be blocked locally. I mean, it may be that you know, I don't, what router are you using? Is it a modern router?
I'm using an Asus router.
Okay. One thing you probably should do is go update the firmware on that.
I did that last night, actually. Okay. I updated the firmware, it actually improved the internet.
And in
general.
Yeah, and if there were any malware on your router, that would have wiped it out. That's good.
Also, I scanned all our computers. We have two Macs and a PC. I used Malwarebytes to scan all those, and it didn't show anything on those. So okay. I'm fairly certain that there is no activity. Now, something that's interesting that may have triggered this is I just had knee surgery, so I've been laid up, and I've been watching a ton of PlayStation View.
And I've actually exceeded my data limit for the month on top.
Hang on. I got to come back here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. I'm still talking a little bit here because I want to get to the bottom of it with David and Escondido. Just a quick recap, he has Cox as his cable company. He thought he got an email from Cox, could easily have been a spoofed email. That's the kind of thing bad guys do, that said, you've got malware in your network, contact us. It had links to what it said were anti-malware, very reputable anti-malware tools, but maybe those links led somewhere else. The phone number, we don't know. Maybe it was Cox, maybe it was somebody else. Now, though, weirdly enough, he's a PlayStation View subscriber. The PlayStation website, PlayStation View website, is blocked. Cox says, we don't block websites. And they wouldn't. I mean, that would be a real cause for an FTC slapdown if they blocked a competitor's website. So I would be surprised if they were blocking it. But where is it blocked? You updated your router, so you know the router's not blocking it.
Mm-hmm. And the PlayStation View service on the Roku is working again, so we've got that fixed. If I go to try to access PlayStation, their website, when I try to log in, I get a repeated error that my username and password isn't correct. And I tried it multiple times. I know it's correct.
Yeah, I would say this is now not Cox, but probably has more to do with PlayStation View. And you've tried it on multiple computers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is when I try to access it on my cell phone via browser, and I'm not using my Wi-Fi, I can access their
website. Oh, really? Maybe Cox is blocking it. Oh, really?
Yeah, very confusing.
Well, that's interesting. Cox was kind of misrepresenting. I'm sure they block some stuff. Everybody does. Might have been misrepresenting that. But they would be really in trouble if they started blocking a competitor like PlayStation View. That'd be a big deal.
Well, PlayStation View's tech support suggested that I call Cox and try to get them to unblock the IP address.
Well, now it's not that it's blocked. You can get to the website, right? But you just can't enter the password.
I can't log in, correct.
So that's not blocked.
Okay.
If you're getting the images from the PlayStation View site, that's not blocked. I don't know what's going on with your password, but that's something that's a separate thing. And honestly, I don't think that has anything to do with Cox at all.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what that has to do with if it's doing it on multiple computers, but then you can log in on your phone. That's odd.
Yeah.
That is really odd. I don't know exactly what that would be. You got me.
Okay.
And have you tried resetting your password just to see?
That's one of the steps that PlayStation View had me do.
Oh, and it's still not working.
Right. We had trouble because I was trying to do that when I was on the line with them via my Wi-Fi network. So that didn't work. So they said, well, can you access our website via your cell phone?
And it did,
and I was able to reset the password there.
That is weird, because, of course, a cell phone, you're using T-Mobile. It's the internet service provider, and it works with T-Mobile, but it doesn't work with Cox. That is a little odd.
It is seems to suggest my network or Cox in this particular
case. Yeah, something's going on. You handled the router, I think, effectively by redoing the firmware. I would look in the settings.
I even changed my password on my router, too, just
good.
To be safe.
Now the next thing is maybe to remove all the computers, you know, turn them off or turn off Wi-Fi on them, and see if you can narrow it down, see if one of the computers is doing something.
Okay.
But you got me. That's a very odd.
Yeah, I thought this was a good one for you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, computers are annoying.
Yes, exactly.
They're annoying, and I don't blame you for saying, well, maybe my internet service provider, since they are a television cable company, has something to do with this. But at this point, I don't know.
Yeah, but I agree with you that would be very risky for them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they're not going to take that chance. There's a lot of scrutiny already on cable internet providers and anti-competitive
behavior. So PlayStation View said maybe if I could get them to change my my IP address.
Yeah, try that. That's actually a good idea. It may actually be PlayStation's blocking your IP address, because that's the other thing. You are doing a different IP address. So, yeah, see if you can. One way to try doing that without calling Cox, it sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, is to disconnect your router and cable modem, wait 10 minutes, and then reconnect. Sometimes you'll get assigned a new IP address.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess I'll just have to...
And I'll get, you know, check out the chat room, because they have all sorts of things that they... It could be an ISP router misconfiguration, could be bad antivirus software blocking PlayStation View. Don't, you know, security software is known sometimes to cause problems like that. A lot of people use PlayStation View with Cox, so, I mean, we know that. So it's not that they block it in general and blanket blocking. Blanket Cox blocking. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on. That's a mystery. 8888 Ask Leo. Sam, Carlsbad, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how are we doing, Leo?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Fantastic. Hey, I got a quick question, hopefully, and you probably could handle it. It's had to do with my cable modem, my router.
Yes, sir.
And I had this dang thing since 2012, and so I think it's out of a blink and getting ready for a new one.
Yeah, now, people get mad at me when I say routers wear out, but they do.
Yes, they do, I bet. Look, here I am. I'm with Cox. That's my cable provider, and I'm looking on their site about which that they recommend, and my God, there's a whole list.
Yeah, you're going to buy one, in other words, which is a good idea. Silly to rent it. It's much more expensive to rent it. And if you buy one, you can get a nice one.
They have one here, the highest capability package, dual band, rather. What channels?
Yeah, you want DOCSIS 3 or 3.1. The Wirecutter recommends Netgear. You can go to the wirecutter.com to see their recommendation. I use Aris, A-R-R-I-S. Those are good, too.
Surfboard's
great. And if you get DOCSIS 3, you're set. It'll save you money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, just make sure, as long as it's one of their recommended ones. You know, it is hard to choose. But, that Aris surfboard, I use that myself.
Well, we got a Netgear Nighthawk Wi-Fi modem, AC1900.
So the Wirecutter used to recommend that Aris.
Okay.
And, you know, I love them. They're really good. They test all the reviews. And their current recommendation for a cable modem, and I'm sure it's compatible with Cox.
It is. Okay, so if you got the surfboard Aris, should I go with the DOC 3.1?
Yeah. So probably your provider's not yet supporting DOCSIS 3.1. They're probably doing DOCSIS 3.
They're not, but they say they will be, but you're good. Ahead of the game.
Good. Yes. So might as well, as long as you're going to buy it, right? The Wirecutter recommends is the Netgear CM500. That's good too. But no, if you're getting that DOCSIS 3.1 Aris surfboard, that's the one I use. You're kind of future proofed.
Now, what about this highest capability package and dual band? Some say no, some say yes, some say Gigablast, Ultimate, Essential.
You get those from the internet service provider, not from the cable modem.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So you don't need to get a cable modem that'll do more than your ISP will. So, but you know, if it's not going to cost you a huge amount more,
no,
it's nice to have that.
Like right in the middle, like $160, $180.
Wow, that is kind of expensive. So the one that the Wirecutter currently recommends is $60 from Amazon, but its DOCSIS 3.0, not 3.1. And the number of channels has to do with your internet service provider.
All right.
No internet service provider does more than 16 by 4, but, you know, who knows? Down the road, they might. I would say don't spend $180, even though after 2 years, you'll probably still be ahead.
Okay, so get the 3.1.
Yeah, don't get the fanciest Aris.
Okay.
Yeah, but if it's DOCSIS 3.1, you're good.
Okay, I got a CB8200 Gigablast.
Nice. Sounds good to me.
Well, okay.
I like personally the Gigablaster 5000, but, you know, if you can get the 300, that's good too.
The 300?
I'm just teasing you. That sounds great. I'm just teasing you. That sounds perfect.
Okay, Leo, you have a safe day out there.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. He's been everywhere, man. He's breathing the mountain air, man. He's our Johnny Jet, the traveling guy. He joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
Or should I say aloha?
Aloha. I'm back from Hawaii. I'm in Los Angeles.
So jealous.
Catching up on all my work. But so it's nice to be home, but it was better to be in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a vacation.
Well, I had a couple of days of vacation at the end. I was really there for work.
Oh.
But then we extended, and that's actually one of the best things. Actually, that's a new term. I don't know if you heard about that.
What's
which
that?
I do not like this term. It's called bleisure.
Bleisure? That sounds painful.
Yeah, it's like business and leisure combined.
So leisure, okay.
I can't remember which hotel chain was starting this. It might have been Best Western, but they're trying to tell people, which I agree with this philosophy. I just don't like this word. Where if you're on a business trip, the best thing to do is to extend and bring your family over if you can, because it will save on costs, save on a flight. And so that's actually one of the new trends is this bleisure thing.
I knew that because a lot of people visit our studios. They're on bleisure. their spouse is there for a conference and they tagged along and they said, let's go visit this. I see that a lot. It's very common. So because business conferences are often in nice areas, places people want to go.
For sure. You'll find them all over nice hotels all around the world. Yeah. So that is definitely the one thing about that, though, is when you are traveling for business and you're bringing your family along, you just got to make sure that they know you're not on vacation, but they are.
Yeah.
So it's kind of difficult because they're like, what's up? Why aren't we going out? And you're like, well, I got to work.
It can set them up for a disappointment. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. And speaking of business trips, everyone asked me, how do I get into all the airport lounges? So there's a great app out there, and it's called Lounge Buddy. and it's for iOS and Android. But I don't use the app. So I don't use the app because I have almost every credit card that gets me into the lounges. But if you don't travel as much as I do, then you want to check out this app because they will sell you you don't need a membership for these lounges, which you normally do, and you don't need elite status, or you don't need a first class ticket, which usually required for most airport lounges and airline clubs.
But you pay a fee for Lounge Buddy, I presume, right?
No, you pay a fee for whatever lounge you're going to access.
Oh, you pay it as you go in.
Exactly. Oh. So they don't have one in San Francisco. I just looked that up for you. They're mostly international.
Lounge Buddy lounges? They're not like the Delta Lounge? No.
They are the Delta lounges. They are the whatever. I'm looking at one for LAX. They have the Alaska Airlines.
I see. So they've negotiated a deal.
They negotiate a deal, and you can buy it in advance. Because sometimes, especially this Alaska Airlines lounge, it can be full. And they won't even let people in if you have a membership.
Right.
But obviously the best way to get into these is to get a certain credit card. And there's all different credit cards depending on which lounges. I have the American Express Platinum for the Centurion lounges and the Delta lounges. I have the City American Airlines card to get into the Admiral Club's lounges. I have the Chase Sapphire to get into the Priority Club lounges. And I have one more I can't even think of it. But
that's a good tip, though, for people who have to travel a lot, business travelers and so forth. Because even if you're not flying business or first class, it's really nice. Because always we spend time in the airport. That's the worst part of travel, is waiting in the airport. Might as well make it a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, the way to master travel is to, get TSA pre, get clear,
treat yourself.
Global entry, and then get into these lounges.
Yeah.
But another great perk about these lounges is that let's say I'm on a flight, American Airlines flight, and my flight is canceled. The first thing I do is I make a beeline to that lounge, the Admiral's Club Lounge, while I'm on the phone with American. But sometimes the hold could be so long that by the time I get to the Admiral's Club Lounge, I can speak to a reservation agent in there. And they call them the American Angels in there. And every airline club lounge has the same thing. The agents can really work magic there, although these computer systems are starting to mess with them. But that's what you want to do. If your flight is canceled, you do not wait around. You don't sit around and wait in this long line. You go to the lounge and you get on the phone, or you even take to Twitter sometimes, depending on, if it's bad weather and there's a lot of people delayed. But that is one of the secrets, and that's worth the fee for these lounges. So
sure.
Most of these lounges, the major airlines will sell you a fee, like $59.
Or you can get in if you pay for it.
Some of them. Yeah. So American Airlines, and depending on the city, it's about $59. But
see, that's not all it's not worth it for me for a stale tuna sandwich with a cut, with a crust cut off and an orange juice. But if it would help me get the next flight, that would be good.
A lot of them don't even have food like that. It's either just snacks like carrot steaks or chips, unless you're in the first class lounge. But again, it's worth it to have access to these, to quiet working space, and also to be able to have access to these agents and not wait in any long lines. So that's why I'm a fan of them.
There's your app, which is Lounge Buddy, iOS and Android.
I just tweeted it, and I'm actually going to put them both in the show notes because my website is a crazy one.
Yeah.
It's called, let me look and see what it's exactly called. I just put it in the show notes as well, the chat room. It's called wingwalkdisplays.co.uk. So this is someone, I don't know why I even brought this up, but someone asked me, like, you know, what's the craziest thing you can do on an airplane? So I did some research, and it looks like the only place you can do it is in the UK. There's
two
spots.
You're not going to walk on the wing, are you?
I am not, but you are. Wallingford and York.
What? You can actually do this?
Yes, we want to put a webcam on your head and see if you can do it.
I would do that.
Would you really?
Yeah. You're strapped
in on a biplane, on the top of a biplane.
You can't fall off, right?
Well, you're not, obviously, no, you're not supposed to, but.
You're not supposed to. Okay.
They've been in business for a while. They use a 1940s.
Have they lost anybody? Biplane. 1940s biplane. It's beautiful.
But there used to be one in Washington State here that used to do it, but they don't do it anymore, I would think, because insurance laws. But
you know what
I
do? I would pay for this, and then they'd be up, and I presume that at some point they say, okay, climb out on the wing now.
Oh, no, no. They strap you in, I think, on takeoff.
They take off with you on the wing?
That's the only way it would work.
Lisa says she's doing it. But she's jumped out of a perfectly good airplane with a parachute on, so this is nothing for her.
And if I was going to do this, I actually would put a parachute on just in case.
It doesn't look like these people are wearing chutes.
Yeah, it does not look like that. No. But it's 10 minutes long. It's about $500. But if you're into adventure, thrill seeking, this is the thing to do.
Crazy.
But you will not see me doing it. But it'd be great to see Lisa.
Is it in the UK only? I guess it is.
It's the only place I've been able to find it. I did some research. Again, it was in Washington State a few years ago, but no longer. That their website's down, and their number I called does not work.
They do give you goggles, but there's nothing to keep the bugs from hitting your teeth.
Yeah, there's video on their website.
Crazy.
It's insane. I know, and I don't think – I hope not too many of your listeners would want to do it, but you never know out there. And actually, when I wrote about it, it was pretty popular, so that's why I'm mentioning it.
JohnnyJet.com, that's the website. You go there, you can find out all about the crazy stuff Johnny does. I think you should – you conquered your fear of flying. Now conquer your fear of wing walking, Johnny.
That takes it to a whole new level.
Actually, it looks like a comfy chair. You're kind of sitting down. You're out there in the air. I wonder how fast they're going because his face
you're probably going 100 miles an hour.
Well, Lisa says she'll
and you're going
do
upside
it.
Down. No way. There's not a chance. I would do this. Not a chance.
All right, Johnny. JohnnyJet.com. That's the website. Go there. You can read more of Johnny's great stuff. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram too. And he's always a welcome guest here on the Tech Guy program. I'm glad you're home. Are you going to stay home for a little bit?
For a couple days.
2 days. That's Johnny for you. Safe travels. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. This is great. This is the craziest thing you've ever done. Look at that. Craziest. You're wild, Mr. Johnny. But Lisa came running in and says she wants to do it.
Wow, I'm really impressed.
She's a daredevil. No, she's a daredevil. I won't even ride a roller coaster, so it seems unlikely that I would do this.
I would chip in for her to do this if she puts a GoPro camera on her head.
Oh, I'd do it with a GoPro.
She'd do it with a GoPro.
Good, let's do it. I'll start the funding.
We don't have we'll pay for it. You don't have to raise money.
You'll need to do it in the UK, though?
But you have to be where in the UK?
It's Wallingford or Yorkshire.
Oh, wow. So it's not even like near London.
Next year we'll have to look
I have to look up.
We'll make a trip. I want to go back. I love the UK. I want to go anyway.
Okay.
So
not mention this because I was like, I don't know, but it's just so out there. I figured, what the heck?
I'm putting the GoPro. I got the GoPro Fusion. I'm putting the GoPro Fusion on her head. Yeah, I have it here because we're gonna do some stuff with it today to tax the.
I'm impressed. I'm really impressed that she wants to do it. That.
Or just hold it like, no, you'd lose it. No, I'm not going to do that. Are you nuts?
Are you going to fly in the plane with me?
No, I'm going to watch from the ground and make sure your insurance is up to date.
I'm sure part of the package is you have video from all the cameras on the plane.
Right, obviously. But it'd be fun to have one on your head.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's a two-seater, so you could be in the back seat, which I don't know if I
No, the pilot is in the other seat. Somebody's flying the plane, Johnny.
That, but I'm not talking about.
Oh,
the
you
seat
don't.
On
you start on the wing. That's right. You're not a passenger, exactly.
Yeah.
if you're lucky, you land on the wing as well. Yeah.
I hope so.
Lisa, are you? Where'd she go? Oh.
They can wear a parachute.
No, they're not wearing parachutes in these videos. Wow. Nice. Hey. All right, Johnny. Thank you. Have a good
week.
Take care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Whew. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number as we talk high tech. And back to the lines we go. Line one, Michael Escondido, California. Hello, Michael.
Well, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm all right, my friend. Hey, I just want to start off by saying I really appreciate you as an educator myself, a professional educator. I appreciate you having this show. And just trying to educate the rest of us that maybe aren't, leaning towards the tech side.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. I appreciate that. And thank you for being an educator. I think there is no more important job, is there?
As do I. Well, my question is this. Obviously, as an educator, I do have some tech competency. But I got a 15-year-old son. And he just finished ninth grade.
Nice.
And after getting straight A's the spring of eighth year and in his first year of freshman, I'd like to reward him and just say, hey, you know, other than verbally and some of the other things I do, he's a gamer. He plays Overwatch. He plays Paladin. He plays Rainbow Siege 6. And I'd like to, invest in him and get him a decent gaming computer. And me just not being a gamer, a computer gaming person, I just like maybe some guidelines to start off to get him a decent unit. And I'd like to think that, Lord willing, I could get him something decent somewhere north of $1,200 but south of $2,000.
You can absolutely do that. That's a good price point. The deal is I wouldn't get a laptop. I would get a desktop.
Okay.
You're going to pay more for a laptop, and it's not going to be as fast.
Some of the priorities, I would say, the graphics, the responsiveness, and the battery life.
Yeah. Well, that the battery life is not an issue on the desktop. The reason is the key element in a gaming system is the graphics processor unit. They call it the GPU. You've heard of the CPU. That's the brains, the Intel chip. But the NVIDIA graphics processing unit is really what makes it a good device. I'll tell you what we got our 15-year-old son, by the way. My strong suggestion is don't let him put it in his bedroom. He'll want to.
Oh, I know.
Put it in a public area, the living room. So at least
things up till zero dark 30 in the morning. So
exactly.
I make him play in my room, and I have a shutdown time that he has.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. I got him an Asus, ASUS, and they call it the Republic of Gaming, ROG. So they have a bunch of ROG gaming machines that I think are reasonably priced and very powerful. I got him the G20Ci, but you can look and pick the one you want. The graphics card, as I said, is going to be the most important part. You're going to want to probably an NVIDIA. I would say a GTX 1060 or better. The 1080 is kind of the top of the line. So are you asking? Yeah, he's going to want a GeForce card. He knows this already. He's going to want the one I got my son has a 1080. That's their kind of high end, but you can get a 1060 for a little bit less. And for the games you described, those would be adequate. But you know what happens with games? They get more and more challenging to the hardware. That's what's driving video game hardware. Yeah.
Well, I do, because he plays in my room. Sometimes I'll spend an hour or two just watching him, and I hear the people that get put on his team. He's playing on a console, and they're routinely calling, "Hey, good job."
Oh, nice.
You know, using the set name. So I know he talks about, look, you can see the difference in graphics. So I know he's good at it. He's committed. And I kind of look at this as a way, you know, when I was a teenager, no one thought that these skateboarders could turn a career out of
skateboarding. Good point. Good point.
He kept skateboarding at 15, 16 years old. And so I'm pretty much convinced his mom, look, when we were teenagers, no one thought this surfing and skateboarding can make a living.
You know what? He's a lucky guy. I hope he appreciates it. You're a very open-minded dad.
So I see this the same thing. These kids are going off. They're having these tournaments in L.A. that he watches.
Yeah.
Two videos every day. So I want to support him. And like I said, he turned a corner the spring of eighth grade. And
good for him. Yeah, and I do think it's important that, you know, you monitor the use, because it is very tempting. It's addictive, and it's not his fault. It's addictive, and he might end up staying up all night playing Overwatch. I can understand that. I might have done that myself once or twice. So it's probably a good idea to have it in your room. I think that's a great idea. But I think it's nice to support him. And, of course, what you want also is maybe he becomes interested in computers and technology. Maybe he shows an interest in other things, like learning how to code or learning how to run networks. All of this stuff comes along with it. So I think this is not a – I'm with you. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think this is part of his generation.
And like I said, the ones that stay on top of it and really commit, just like the things we committed to,
yeah.
You know, they can take it as far as they want.
Yeah. Well, I would take a look at their Republic of Gaming systems. There's a pretty broad price range. You said under $2,000, between $1,200 and, say, $1,800 or $1,900. You should easily be able to do that. Remember to save a little money for the monitor. He's going to want a nice monitor. Fortunately, monitors have come down a lot.
And so give me a rec on the monitor.
Well, you should talk to him. I mean, Asus sells monitors, so you can get a complete system from them. He may want one of these big widescreen curved monitors. They're really nice.
Some of them are using these double monitors set up.
Yeah, that's what he's going to want, the 34-inch curved monitor. That you'll have to see if you want to spend the money on that. Think that's going to add to it, but not as much as it used to be. It used to be a good monitor was $1,000. They're now down well under $500. So I think you'll be able to get it. The one I got my son is Oculus ready. It means he can run the Oculus Rift VR. I don't know if your son's into that or not, but that's something to keep in mind as well. What's nice is it's very compact. It's beautiful looking. You won't mind having it there. It's not too noisy. Asus sells monitors, so you can get an appropriate monitor, keyboard, and mouse to go along with it. I think they've done a very good job with their gaming line. So that's and it was, as I said, it's where I put my money after doing some research. So I think.
Okay, would you recommend Best Buy, or is there other vehicles?
You can get it online. Best Buy's fine. Although I think online you might do a little bit better. I did it online. Amazon sells these. I think the problem with going to Best Buy is they're going to steer you in directions that they're interested in. I'm looking at the Asus GR8 VR-ready mini gaming desktop. It has an i7 and a GeForce 1060. As I said, a little bit slower, but fine. That's $1,135 from Amazon. And then you can get that leaves you some budget for a decent monitor and keyboard. It comes with keyboard and mouse. Look on Amazon. They have all of these. There's a 27-inch curved monitor. The Asus ROG Strix is $335. So now you're about $1,600 all in.
Well, that's interesting. One or two pitfalls I might, that maybe is not in a description.
Well, one of the reasons you get these is they're not going to underpower them, because they know you're going to use them for gaming. So it's going to have, in this case, it's 8 gigs of RAM. I would like to see 16, but 8's enough. It's going to be equipped appropriately. It's not going to be a 4 gigabyte, because that would be not enough for gaming. You'd want at least 8 gigs. I would like 16 gigs of RAM. Hard drive size is not critical. Most of them will come with half a terabyte. Terabyte would be nice, a little more expensive. It's really going to come down to price. So, but I think anything that Asus says, this is an ROG gaming system, is going to be a good starting point. You're not going to miss out.
So if I go with this GTX 1080, you think that'll?
Well, the 1080 is even better. The 1060 will save you some money. If you can afford a 1080, your son will love you for an extra 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for the call. You're a good dad. I think a lot of dads are listening going, I'm not giving the kid a gaming machine. I'll never see him again. But it is part of his life, right? And it's something he loves. And if he's doing good work, he's staying, keeping his grades up. And you know what's great about giving something like this? It gives you something you could take away if the grades go down. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Ooh, it's time. Talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We can talk smartphones. We can talk smartwatches. We can talk Intel i9 processors, MacBook Pros, Windows, Surface Goes, all of that. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. 888-827 5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call. But you have to call using Skype or something like that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones we go. Line two, Pat in Victorville, California. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Hey, I listen to you all the time. I called you once to tell you that I was going out of Copenhagen up to St. Petersburg, and I was going to ask you what I should look at when I was there, but I couldn't get through.
Oh, rats. Well, what did you look at while you were there? Did you have fun?
Oh, I had a great time.
Isn't that a nice trip? Yeah, I've done that twice now.
Trip.
Oh, I love it. It's so beautiful. St. Petersburg, something. Did you get to see the Hermitage Museum?
Yeah.
Catherine's Palace.
Yeah, we did one of the excursions through the ship. So it was like a 2-day trip on a bus.
Oh, wow. Wow, you can get to Moscow and back in that time.
Yeah, so we were out and about. So it was actually really fun.
Nice. Well, what can I do for you today?
Hey, I've got a fifth-wheel trailer, and I cannot see. With the mirrors extended all the way out, I cannot see the cops roaring up behind me.
So, you want cameras? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I need some type of camera that I can put on there that I can look behind me. But online, I was noticing they go all the way from $49.95 to $800. I don't want to. I'd like to spend somewhere around maybe $150.
You shouldn't. The cameras are cheap. Really, where you spend money is on the software, depending on how good that is and how it's connected. Because
it's got to be wireless.
Yeah, exactly. So. Because it's going to be on the back of the truck, right? All the way in the back.
Yeah, it's in the back of the trailer, all the way at the
trailer.
Back.
And you then there's now, of course, you do have a connection because you have your lights back there, right? So,
yeah.
There might be a way to connect it
to the power.
Yeah. But there are a number of cameras that use Bluetooth. Is probably not going to work either. It's far enough back that it's probably not going to work. So yep. You may be getting a more expensive camera just because of the nature of this. It's not going to be mounted in the cab. It's going to be back on the trailer, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be in the very back of the trailer. Yeah. It's going to be probably 35 feet from the monitor on the dash.
Yeah. Well, there certainly are Wi-Fi cameras that'll do this. I'm not really familiar with them because. Most of the time, on a regular vehicle, you're going to have a way to get it connected through. We had a backup camera. Actually, this might, if I can remember the name of it, it was a backup camera that fit onto the license plate. It was a frame for the license plate. And I think that actually did use a wireless connection.
Yeah, the only thing is if there's somebody directly behind me, I want to be able to look over the top of them. So it's got to be up above, up near the roof. So I can look, part way down this, a half a mile down the street.
Right.
So.
Well,
I didn't want some tailgater right up against me, and all I can see is his license plate, you know. So
yeah, and most of these, the way they work is your phone becomes the screen.
Yeah.
So
well, I was gonna use a tablet that I have.
Oh, tablet works same way. So the one I was thinking of, the Esky, but that is actually attached to a frame for the license plate. But there are others that you could screw into, you know, above the doors on the trailer, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like the 4U cam, the number 4 UCAM. It's a Wi-Fi backup camera. And what you want is what's called a backup camera, because it's not, you're not using it for backing up, but it's something off the rear of the truck. It connects, it needs 12-volt power, but I presume because you can get power to your lights, you've got some way to connect up to that, right?
Oh, yeah. The trailer's got 12-volt power,
all right,
you know, for when I'm out in the rough. It's actually a toy trailer, so it's got a big giant door in the back so you can put the razor in there.
Got it.
But
it's a toy trailer? You have toys in the back there? So Pyle, P-Y-L-E, makes these as well as Esky, E-S-K-Y. They're not expensive. All four of the ones I just described are under $100. They all use Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And I think Wi-Fi would work. You need an iOS or Android device. You're going to put an app on the device, and it's going to basically join the camera's join the camera's Wi-Fi signal. The only challenge is going to be Wi-Fi going through the metal of that trailer, you know, might be a little bit challenging. So you want to probably put it as close to the top as you can so that it can skip over the top. And of course, the other thing you want to look for, and all of these that I'm looking at are IP66 or better rated, so they're waterproof. You don't, obviously, it's going to be out there in the water.
Yeah.
So I would take a look at that 4U cam. That's $99. It's a backup camera. It's designed for attaching to a license plate, but it could be attached anywhere. It doesn't have to be there. And it gives you 110 degree wide angle, so if you're up at the top of the trailer, you'll have a very good view of the road behind you. It has night vision. That's something else you want, because at night you don't want to just see headlights. You'd like to see something else besides that. Yeah. But there are a lot of, this is a fairly common thing. A lot of people in older cars want backup cameras. You know, we get used to it. I don't know if I could back up anymore if I had to look over my shoulder. I couldn't do it. So backup cameras are probably the least expensive, most common choice for this. So there you go. So what basically happens is the camera becomes a Wi-Fi access point. And your phone or your tablet will join that Wi-Fi access point. And at that point, the app will say, I see the camera, and show it to you the whole time. And that seems like a sensible way to do this. The only issue is going to be how strong the Wi-Fi is and if it's going to get over the top. And that's probably, make sure where you buy it. If you buy it on Amazon, they have a good return policy. Make sure whoever does, you might be able to have to return it. If you can't get through the Wi-Fi, can't get through the trailer.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, okay.
I think it's a good idea. It's a great idea.
The first one you said was 4U cam.
I'm looking on Amazon, $99. 4U cam Wi-Fi backup camera for iPhone, iPad, and Android. It's called the number 4, the letter U, CAM, all one word.
Okay, I'll look that up on my computer.
Yep. Nice to talk to you. Take care. Have fun with your toys. He's got a trailer full of toys. Jet skis, motorboats. I don't know what's in there. Razor scooters. I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little teeny weeny break. When we come back, more of your calls. We'll talk high tech. Stay right here. No, Chumley, I completely disagree now, having played with this i9. I think that the people who are quick to brand this problematic are not probably, you know, there's certain use cases where any laptop chip is going to be a problem. But the i9 is fantastic. I am getting such great performance. Yeah, just to sign up for the temporary, to be notified, they'll get you another one. another molecule soon. But so I disagree, Chumley, and I'm sitting here in front of an i9, and I'm very, very happy. We're going to do on the new screensavers, I have a Final Cut project we'll compress. I'll show you what happens with long-term, hard working of the processor. Of course, it gets hot and slows down. That's going to happen. But most of the stuff I'm doing, compiling software, processing photos in Lightroom, which is a pig on any other machine I've used. It's just unusable. It's great. It's super fast. I'm watching the processor. It's clocking up to 4 gigahertz and higher, and it's the thermals are not causing problems. So the kinds of things most people do, which are somewhat bursty, the i9 can handle quite well. But nothing in a laptop is going to handle half an hour of 100% on the GPU and CPU. Nothing's going to, you're going to have to slow down. There's just no way around that. And I think that's an unreasonable expectation if that's what people want. The i9 is, it's not a whole lot faster. I think it's a few hundred megahertz faster than the i7. But it's, so the 6 cores are a big part of this as well. And, you're not going to see the benefit unless you have multi-core programs, except that the single core clock speed is faster than anything else out there. So you definitely see that. We'll show you. I've got the, before Intel discontinued it, I have the Intel CPU gadget, and so we'll be able to show exactly what happens and when it, when it's a problem, when it's not a problem. It's not always a problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'm here. I'm here for you. It's kind of a user group of the airwaves, right? So it's not just me. We've got the hundreds of people in the chat room. We've got all the people listening. We've got a great website. It's free, wide open, good search, techguylabs.com. Maybe I can't answer every question. In fact, I haven't been able to answer a lot of questions today. There have been some tough ones. But, between all of us, we're going to figure it out. We'll figure it out for you. We'll help you. Dave on the line from Duluth, Minnesota. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
What can I do for you, sir?
Well, I got this HP 6700 printer, and it keeps disconnecting from the router modem. I thought the modem was a problem because it was like 5 years old. So I bought a new one, an Aries, and it does the same thing. You go to print something, and it says no connection to the printer. Well, if you reset the modem, it prints that one, and then the next one, same thing, no connection to the printer. So I've tried several HP fixes online, and none of those. Everything says it's working fine.
So your router, your modem work with everything else. You can still surf the web and all of that. It's just the printer itself.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, there's not much I can say except there's something wrong with the printer. Because I don't know what's wrong with the printer. You've tried a few things. It's not unusual, by the way. Printers are not notoriously well known for their ability to do Wi-Fi. It should stay connected all the time. Go ahead.
I tried a wired connection, and it did the same thing with wired.
It did the same thing with wired. Oh, that's interesting, because that eliminates a whole category of solutions I was going to offer you. Because Wi-Fi is, a funny thing. Sometimes it looks like it's not there. A printer has to be fairly tolerant to print to Wi-Fi. It has to, I can't see it. Oh, I can see it now. That kind of thing. And as we've used more and more devices in our house with Wi-Fi, as our neighbor's Wi-Fi gets stronger, it's not unusual for Wi-Fi connectivity to be kind of spotty. But if it's still happening with Ethernet, directly connected with Ethernet, that's an interesting conundrum.
Well, I've got a TV right next to it, and I've got two cordless telephones at the desk, and I thought moving those away might help.
Yeah, for Wi-Fi, yeah. But you try the Ethernet, and the Ethernet's going into your router?
That's correct.
And does it sometimes work with Ethernet, or does it never work with Ethernet?
Every time you reboot it, it works with Ethernet.
Okay, so it works for a little while and it stops.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that sounds like... How old is the printer?
Well, the printer is about 5 or 6 years
yeah.
old.
Yeah. It sounds like something's gone wrong with the network connectivity in the printer. And, you know, there's not it's not an easy thing to fix. I don't know if you've called HP or not, but I would guess something that old, they're not going to offer any warranty service or even paid service for it. They're just going to say, yeah, it's worn out. You should get a new one.
I do their online. I have their online fixed printing program, and that tells me that, everything's fine.
But yeah. No, it's definitely something wrong with the network. So it's not just Wi-Fi. It's hardwired, which means there's something wrong with the network card in the printer. These things fail. 6 years. It just broke. It's hard for me from a distance, obviously, to diagnose it. But from what you've told me, you were smart to try the wired just to see if it was a Wi-Fi problem. Because, yeah, with the cordless phones and the TV, there's all sorts of wireless noise going on there. But it's still happening. Even when you're Ethernet plugged in, that means it's the network card in the printer that's messed up. If you can, you know, check and see if there's new firmware, I would download it. Even if there isn't. Sometimes you can redo the firmware in something and that fixes these things. So even if there isn't. But I have to be honest with you. Printer's price has gone down a lot in the last 6 years. You probably get as good or better printer for not too much money. And I think that's most likely your best bet at this point. Your networking is flaky. That's frustrating, isn't it? You know, see if there's a firmware update. Call HP if you're in the mood to be on hold for a while. Of course, we kept you on hold for a long time too, didn't we? But it does sound like the printer. Noah in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Noah.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. So we recently picked up a new soundbar for our like home theater setup, and we have Google Homes and Google Home Minis throughout our entire house, and we have Chromecasts too. So we just say, "Hello, Google, turn on the living room TV," and it turns on the TV and starts up and switches to the Chromecast input. But the one thing we're having troubles with is we still have to manually turn on our soundbar.
Oh. So close.
Yeah.
I was so impressed. Yeah, and the device can only turn on the things it can turn on. And if it doesn't know about the soundbar, it's not going to be able to turn it on. How did you set it up with the TV?
We have a newer smart TV with like the built-in like control by HDMI.
It has Cast. Oh, I see. All right. Yeah, so why is the soundbar getting turned off, I guess would be the first question. Why don't you just leave it on?
It auto turns itself off.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah, I know.
Just to save power, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, I would keep it on all the time.
It's not pulling any juice when it's not playing any sound.
Yeah, it's literally illuminating an LED.
Yeah, and there's no way. Who makes the soundbar?
Oh, goodness. It is an odd company I've never heard of.
Yeah, so look in the manual and see if there's any way you can disable the power down mode. You know, maybe they call it eco mode or something like that. If you could disable that, maybe that would be the solution. Okay.
The manufacturer is Danby, I believe.
Danby, all right. I know them. Now, here's a good idea from Joe in our chat room. I like this one. Joe says, well, here's the question. If the soundbar powers on automatically when it gets powered up, you could test this by unplugging it, plugging it in. Does it come on when you plug it in? Then you could get a smart plug for the soundbar and have the Google Assistant turn the smart plug on. But before you do that, test to see if, and I bet it does, by the way, if the soundbar is unplugged and you plug it in, does it come on?
It doesn't.
It doesn't. Curse you, Danby! Curse you and all you Danby folk. Well, that was a good idea, Joe.
I don't know if this has Bluetooth built in, so
yeah.
I don't think I can wake it via Bluetooth, though.
Probably not. Man, why does it go to sleep?
I wish I knew.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's trying to save you a little juice, but it seems like... Yeah, so these home assistants, these smart home devices really only work with the things they work with. And if it doesn't know about the Danby soundbar, it's not going to be able to turn it on. Does it come with a remote, the soundbar?
Yeah.
All right. So the remote is probably infrared.
Yeah.
So that's another way you can do this. In fact, this might be a great solution in general. Something Harmony makes called the Hub. It's under $100, the Harmony Hub. And it has infrared, so it can control any device that has an infrared remote control, including your Danby. And it can be controlled by your Google Home. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that's if you have a wireless remote that does infrared, which almost all remotes do, that would be an easy thing to fix. You just need to have the Harmony Hub. Now, before you buy it, you might check the Harmony websites from Logitech and make sure that it supports this. But the Harmony has been around for so long, I've never found a device it doesn't know about. And even if it doesn't, you can sometimes train it. But what you'll essentially be doing is talking to the Hub, and the Hub will turn on the things that you need to get the same result. So that's another way to do it.
A question similar to this. We have a Samsung TV in my parents' room, and we can turn it on with Google Assistant, but we can't turn it off with Google Assistant. Would the Hub kind of take care of that too?
Well, you know, the Hub's designed for a AV setup. So what is it that won't turn on and off the TV?
It won't turn the TV off.
It only turns it on. Yeah, the Hub might do a better job with it. If you get one, before you know, you can only set it up in one place because it has to be line of sight to all the devices. That's infrared as light. But you could try it. You could quickly bring it in your parents' room and see if it can turn it off and on. That's interesting. It can only turn it on but not off.
And it's also got the, like, smart HDMI port. So I don't understand because, like, our Samsung TV we have in the living room, it works fine with. It'll turn it on.
Yeah, so what it's using is a technology called CEC. And the problem with CEC, and they have different companies have different names for it, but the problem with it is, you know, stands for Consumer Electronics Control, and the problem with it is a very loose specification, and CEC has never worked well. And so it sounds like the CEC can turn the TV on, but the TV can't be turned off by CEC. Victor's has a solution. What is it, Victor? Right. Does that TV have an on or off switch, or is it one switch that turns it on, turns it off, on?
It has this weird, like, nubbin. It's like a four-way directional, like, nub sticking out of the bottom of the TV.
This is not a Danby TV, too, is it?
It is not.
I think Danby is a house brand of somebody. Yeah, it's an appliances. Okay.
Yeah, my dad picked it up at like ABC Warehouse.
Yeah, it's very cheap. Danby's a leader in refrigeration and specialty appliances.
Oh boy!
But they do make a soundbar. They also make dehumidifiers, dryers, and ice makers. So,
because before he would have went, I would have said, "Hey, let's look for one."
If it's a Danby, so I think it. I don't know if it'll work, but you're going to get one anyway, and you could try it. So there's a distinction between some TVs. Older TVs have on and off switches, two distinct switches. But most TVs, it's a toggle. But I don't know why the CEC isn't working to turn the TV off, except that it, you know, whoever made that TV said, "Oh, you know, we'll turn it on." But why would they ever want to turn it off? I don't know.
Well, they're both Samsung TVs.
Oh.
They both have CEC, but the slightly older by, I think, a year TV can't turn it off.
Isn't that weird?
Look in the settings.
Look in the settings. There may be something in there. CEC is such a mess.
Yeah.
Just a nightmare.
I was just glad that it worked at all.
Yeah. It's amazing. You're obviously the home tech guy, Noah.
Unfortunately.
Next time, don't let Dad leave home without you.
Oh, I know.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Noah. Take care.
Thank you very much.
All right. 8888-ASK. Leo, if you're on the line, hang on the line. We got another half hour on the radio, but I'm going to keep answering calls for another hour after that. We're recording ahead for a future episode where I'll be on vacation, so you can help me out if you keep those phones ringing. 8888-ASK-LEO. Jerry, Costa Mesa, California. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Jerry.
Jerry. Jerry, I hear somebody. Jerry? Jerry, are you there? Should we mess with Jerry? Help me. Help me. I'm trapped in the phone. Help me. Help me. There's Jerry. Hi, Jerry. He's laughing, but he's not talking. All right, well, I can't help you then. Mimi, Orange County, California. Hi, Mimi.
Well, hi. How are you, Leo?
I'm good. How are you?
Just fine. I'm so glad to get through.
Well, I am glad you did, too. What can I do for
you? I really like your show.
Thank you.
I'm not a big tech person because I work outdoors all day. So,
what do you do that you work outdoors all day? I would rather be doing that than sit in front of a computer all day.
I know, but in the hot sun, I deliver mail.
Oh, you're a mail carrier.
Yes, I am.
My favorite people in the world.
Why, thanks.
Yes. Awesome. You know, I don't know why. It's ever since I've been a kid, I've loved the mail carrier. I always have a great relationship with them. And I think it's because when you're a kid, the mail carrier doesn't bring bills.
Nope.
The mail carrier brings presents. It's only when you're a grown-up that the mail carrier starts bringing you things you don't want.
Yeah. But now it's both. Now it's bills and good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I get lots of good stuff from my mail carrier. So what can I do to help you with your technology?
Well, just recently I invested in a Ring Video Doorbell 2. I'm not sure if that's something I'm going to use because I do not have internet at home and I don't have a computer at home.
Oh, yeah. See, this is, by the way, they're sponsors. So, but this is what we call an Internet of Things device. It needs internet, it needs Wi-Fi or it won't do anything. I mean, it'll ring the doorbell, but there's no point in having a camera and a speaker and all that stuff because it won't do any of that. Do you have a smartphone?
I do. And that's what my question was. Do I absolutely have to have internet at home?
Yeah.
Or do I have to, or can I use it on a second cell phone that I leave at home?
Well, yeah, you could. That seems like an expensive thing, but you could do that. Yeah. It has to have Wi-Fi of some kind. And that Wi-Fi doesn't have to come from an internet service provider. It could come from a wireless cellular phone. Sure. You put the phone in hotspot mode. That would set up. You'd have to keep the phone plugged in, obviously, because it's going to drain the battery. That would set up a Wi-Fi network. Put it close because these hotspot phones don't go very far. But if it's close to the doorbell then, when you set it up, it's got a little orange button on the back. You press it. It says, I see some Wi-Fi. Is this it? And you set it all up. And it'll just work. I mean, it's a little weird because...
Yeah. But is it because I don't have... I feel like having internet service, it's $30 a month, and at least, right?
But that cell phone's not free. It's going to cost you that much for internet on the cell phone.
Do you think so?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to get a cell phone working for less than $30 a month.
Yeah, well, I was trying to see if I could, be thrifty and try to maybe get another phone on my plan, which I already have another phone. I already have an extra
phone. Yeah, but I think it's going to end up costing you similar. You know what you could do? Ask your neighbors.
Oh, yeah. That did cross my mind.
No, I'm serious. I mean, don't steal it from them, but say, hey, look, I don't have Wi-Fi. I don't want Wi-Fi. I can't afford Wi-Fi. But I would like my doorbell. And by the way, neighbor, this will help you because the video will capture people in the neighborhood doing bad things. It's part of the deal. So and it doesn't use a lot of bandwidth because the camera's only sending... When you, say, hey, what's going on, or it senses movement. It's not sending all the time. See if you can, if you're close enough to your neighbor, it means you have to be within 100 feet of your neighbor. But if you're close enough to your neighbor, just say, if you live in an apartment, this shouldn't be a problem at all. And if you're in a house, then, it's got to be fairly close. Say, I just want to see if I could see your Wi-Fi. I promise you I won't use it for anything but the doorbell. And by the way, I'll share the doorbell picture with you so you can see how the neighborhood's going.
That's true. Yeah, I could potentially do that. I just wanted to get your opinion.
You're a mailman. Everybody should trust you. You're a uniformed employee of the federal government.
Yes. It's not me. I don't trust. It's not us. It's a busy street.
Your neighbors should trust you, though. Well, you as a mailman know that one of the real benefits of a camera doorbell is package thieves.
Yeah, I know.
People come and they steal. That's one of the best things about these video doorbells is you can keep an eye on things out there. And it sends you a notification on your phone when somebody rings your doorbell, but also when somebody just comes up the path. You know, and you could set where the motion detection is, and you could and I get on my phone. I have to disable it during the show because it's always going off. Hey, somebody's coming up the path. It's always the kid coming and going, stuff like that. But it's nice. You can see what's going on.
This is true.
Do you carry one of those great mail bags, those leather mail bags?
We have to. It's a requirement.
I like those. Can you buy those as a civilian?
No. Well, maybe for the price. If the price.
just say, hey, mailman, can I buy your bag? They're probably too big for like. I just like how they look.
Yeah, they do look nice. I agree.
So you're a walking mail carrier. You walk from door to door.
I do. Well, I'm everywhere.
Because my mail person drives up a little Jeep. Drives in a little Jeep.
Yes.
Yeah, she doesn't have to. Yeah, that's nice. But you stay in shape. You get to know all the kitty cats and the doggies on the route.
Yes, and I have a lot of business customers. So.
Oh, see, that's fun. I never met a mail carrier who wasn't very cheerful. I think it's a good job.
Good. Yeah, I think you need to have that attitude for sure.
Yeah. You're a people person. So use your people skills and ask your neighbors, hey, can I borrow a cup of Wi-Fi? It's for a good cause, but otherwise, yeah, you do need internet. There, you know, your phone company probably better deal than getting a phone. Your phone company will sell a little Wi-Fi, like a credit card size device that gets internet from their cell service, and then it is a Wi-Fi access point. A lot of people use that for home. The only disadvantage of those is they usually are limited to 5 gigabytes a month, but that's enough for your doorbell.
That's true enough, right?
Yeah.
5 gigs. Okay.
Yeah, instead of getting a phone, just get that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you recommend that the doorbell too, or is there a better version?
Well, they're a sponsor, so I happen to like them a lot. It's what I have. I have the original Ring on my house. It has a feature that you would like, the neighborhood feature, where you can share your video with other people in the neighborhood with Ring doorbells, and it becomes a neighborhood watch system that's really effective. It's actually a really clever idea.
Yeah, and I should talk more with my neighbors. I don't believe that they even have this. It's a very old, established neighborhood, but most of the neighborhoods out here do have them.
Yeah. Yeah, you see them, right? You see them every time you go to a door. There's a door. That's why you thought, I'm going to get one of these. Everybody's got them.
Exactly, and they talk to you.
Yes.
The customer can see
Hello?
Whoever they're at, and they talk to
you. Yeah, leave the package on the doorstep. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm in Hawaii, but go ahead and leave
it. Yeah. Yeah, what am I thinking? You're like, of course you experience these all the time.
Yes, I do.
Is it mail carrier approved?
I believe so. I like it.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, keep me honest.
Hey, it's great to talk to you.
Good talking to you, too. Thank
Have
you.
A great day. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mail carrier approved. That is awesome. Rock the boat. Don't rock the boat, baby. Rock the boat. Don't get the boat over. Rock the boat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, discoing out with Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He can do the rope like nobody's business. Do you remember those old moves, Dickie D?
Some of them, not a lot of them.
The hustle.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that I do.
Da, 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 da. Dickie joins us. Takes a little time out from writing for Mad Magazine to talk about gizmos and gadgets because he's kind of a gizmo Wizard. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. What do you got?
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of events in July promoting holiday gift ideas, because back to the days when print magazines needed to know everything by September 1st. So at one of these events, I found out about Arcade. It's called Arcade One Up. Now, the salesman there is one of the funniest people I met, unintentionally, okay? So he said, people who like arcade games buy full-size arcade games for their basements. And they're $3,000 to $4,000. They weigh hundreds of pounds. He said, but we are making a four-foot-high, $400 arcade device. And we've licensed a lot of the games from Atari. And I said, sir, I live in a 2.5-room apartment. He goes, oh, Dick, this is perfect. This is perfect. This is perfect for that.
He's clearly never been to your place.
No, not only that, Leo, he says, but if you have a house, he said, they just weigh 60 to 65 pounds. Oh. So you play in the bedroom, then you bring it to the den, and then bring it out to the patio. And he said, the best thing is, when your kid goes back to college, they can take it with them.
What?
I know. I'm thinking.
Now, these are the old arcade games. These are from the good old days.
Yes. You know, Midway, Defender.
But they look like, I'm just looking at on your website, Gizwiz Does Biz. They look like the old kind of, you know, arcade games you would play at the
Yes,
the gallery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All the matching buttons, whatever the original machine had. Now they use, you know, a 17-inch TV in there.
Yeah, there's nothing in them. The whole thing's hollow. There's a Raspberry Pi, probably. Yeah, I mean, they don't need much to do this.
That's exactly right. But they, you know, they commissioned the original artwork and all the original games.
Is it just one game per unit?
It's four games in each one. If you go to their website, you'll see each unit. And then on the bottom of each unit, it tells you what games is inside it.
So it's three quarters scale. So it's three quarters the size of the one you played
exactly.
As a kid. All right.
And if you want to stand, they make a base so that you can make it the height of the original.
Okay.
But mainly it's for people who want to sit and play. And they even sell a little stool for us old people who want to sit and play.
Can I charge people to use it? Are they like, does it have quarters?
There's no coin slot. But I would, if I had one, just put a tip jar on it.
Oh, this is the one I'd get. It's got Rampage, Gauntlet, Joust, and Defender. I love Joust. I love Defender. I love Gauntlet. I don't know about Rampage.
There you go.
These are my games.
You know what? Bring it to the bedroom. Carry it into the kitchen. It is so convenient. Bring it in the backyard.
60 pounds.
60 pounds. Bring it to the studio.
You're crazy. Centipede, Crystal Castles, Missile Command, and Millipede. Oh, I want that one, too.
Okay. Maybe I'll get you a deal.
Final Fight, Ghosts and Goblins, 1944. And I can't even read what that is. Spider? Cider?
I think it's Spider.
Lunar Lander, Asteroids, Tempest. Oh, I want that one. And oh, man, Major Havoc.
Well, you have to wait till the fall, but you can. And Street Fighter, it's all the different versions of Street Fighter.
This is incredible. And if you get the Centipede one, see, the thing is about Joust and Centipede, you need like these roller balls to play it. Oh, they do. They have the controls.
They do.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
Whatever the original arcade form of play.
I have to point out.
Okay,
that
go ahead.
You can build one of these using a Raspberry Pi and old TV lying around. And you put MAME or something on it, and you could play like 3,000 games. But those are illegal. This is licensed.
This is licensed. Yeah. Absolutely.
I know. I'm tempted. How much?
$400. $399.
That's surprisingly good.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It comes in kit form.
I spent that much just playing Joust in quarters. That's 1,600 games of Joust.
Well, you know what? You could put it in the studio with a tip jar.
But they're small.
They're 4 feet high.
So they're like, you'll feel like, man, I've grown a lot since those days.
Oh, no. That's why
you know, they seemed so big when I was a kid.
You had to buy the little stool.
I had to get on a stool just to play them. Now I have to have a stool for the game.
Yeah, and that's it's a 17-inch screen that you're playing on.
Want to know more? Go to gizwiz.biz. This is good stuff, Dick. I like it.
Good.
Yeah. Some assembly required.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow. That's really neat. And the website is arcade1up.com. Dick's website is gizwiz.biz. Actually, just go there because he's got the link, gizwiz.biz. And while, you know, click the link that says the Gizwiz visits the tech guys. That's all the stuff he ever talks about on our show. But he does other shows like World News Now on ABC. So if you want to find out what he talks about on those shows, you can go to the website, and he's got links there. He also has a link to his What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine by identifying a close-up picture of some oddball gizmo or gadget from his warehouse. He's been collecting these for some time, friends.
Yes.
All right, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Okay, buddy.
Take care. That is such memories. That's actually how I got into technology, is I would go to the Chuck E. Cheese down the road right after my radio show. That's back in my 20s. This would be in the 70s, late 70s. And I'd go and I'd play, and I spent so much money on Battle Zone and Asteroids. I thought, I should get one of those brand new Atari VCS video game systems. I should get one of those. Because it's like hundreds of dollars, but I'll save money in the long run. And I did. And I thought, well, this is kind of cool. But really, the games are better if you get the Atari 400 computer. Oh, that was a little more money. So I sold the VCS, got the 400 computer. Ooh, I started typing in stuff, but it had a terrible keyboard. You know, for a little bit more, you get the Atari 800, has a real keyboard. And that was it. It was over for me. and the tech guy was born. I had to do something to support my habit. I think I have time for another call before we have to wrap it up. Jerry's on the line from Costa Mesa, California. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Sorry I missed you last time.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're here now. Somebody was laughing. Was that?
Yep. It must have been me because I was concentrating on my screen. I probably was laughing at you.
You were laughing at me. Well, I'm glad we got you. Thank you for holding on. What can I do for you?
Yeah, well, I've been a listener of yours for a long time, and I always take your advice seriously. So I was scouting a new printer, so I went out and bought the Echo.
Nice.
I loved it, absolutely loved it. And I ran flawlessly for about 3 months.
Uh-oh.
2 weeks ago, I had this, I could not get it to print for me. Every time I went to print something, it told me it wasn't online.
Well, hang on for a sec, because I do have to take a break, wrap it up.
Okay.
But I'll help you while we're in the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And if you're on the line, hang on. We're going to get to all your calls in a bit. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy Show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Well, let me finish up with you, though, before we go to our next one. So it just doesn't print at all, or what happens?
Yeah, it just doesn't print at all. Won't acknowledge anything. So I'm thinking, okay, I've done something wrong, so I will go to Epson. So I go on with one of the Epson techs. Nice gal. She runs me through the whole thing. We reinstall the
drivers. Yeah.
And try to get wouldn't work. She said, "Well, you really need to go to Microsoft and find out. It's got to be something with your computer.
Lord, I wish people wouldn't do that.
So I go off to Microsoft and spend like an hour and a half on the phone with Microsoft. And of course, they would try to sign me up for a $49 repair.
Yeah, it's not.
Because it's
nuts. No, none of this makes sense. Unfortunately, you know, computers are not designed for mortals, for humans. They're designed for IT professionals by IT professionals. And the number one biggest problem people have is printing. It's I don't know why it's held together with baling wire and chewing gum. I don't know. It's just.
Yeah.
And I was talking to some IT guys the other day, and they say that's their worst nightmare. Somebody calls up and I can't print. So yeah. There's so many things that could go wrong. Go ahead.
Okay, so I came up with a solution, I thought. So I I'm online. I'm looking at various things, and I came up with an outfit called Driver Support Tech. And I went on their went to look at their service, and I the service that claims they'll you sign up for $9.95, I think is what the service is, and they'll clean your computer up, make everything run better, And I thought, well, the hell with it. I've spent like 3 hours on the phone, on the computer with this other stuff, so I would do it with them. So I did. I was on the phone for about an hour with their tech. He cleaned my computer. Wonderful. I've got it so speedy now, I can't believe it. My printer works. Excellent. I can't say enough. I don't know what Microsoft, puts all these things on. They want you to sign up or sign into all of their...
This is mind-boggling, because normally I would say these guys are, at best, just selling you a pack of hoo-ha, and at worst are hackers. So what's the name of this one that you went to?
I went to Driver Support.
Driver Support.
Right.
And the Windows Driver Authority. So he got online remote. He got online remotely.
Remotely, and I sat there for an hour and a half watching him empty, going through all my programs to find out if I had any malware or what. Because I've got safety stuff on my computer. Went through all of that stuff, cleaned everything out. When we finished, I was in awe. I can turn that printer on. It prints everything. It prints off the internet for me. It scans. It does all the stuff that, I bought the printer for.
And they charged you how much?
$9.95.
$9.95?
You got it.
Well, I'll be honest. If you'd asked me ahead of time, I wouldn't have recommended it.
Yep. Well, I was very skeptical about it, but I'll tell you what. I was so damn mad. Because when I bought the printer originally, I went through the thing following the directions. I'm pretty savvy. I've been around computers since you invented them. And my computer ran, halfway decently. But I tell you, I had somebody from come in and do the installation for me because I wanted to do Wi-Fi. And so he came in, set it up. It ran just perfectly.
Well, I'm glad you had a success. So, and it was cheap. And congratulations. I actually can't get on the site because it's blocked due to malware from our system.
Oh.
But I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I couldn't recommend them highly enough. They really did a great job. And I don't know. I every once in a while I get to the point where I think, somebody's got a hold on me.
Yeah.
My computer's acting up, and I do the control delete, stuff to get rid of whoever's horsing around with my computer. And I had gotten to the point where I was just, I went 2 weeks without my printer.
Well, I'm thrilled that they got it working. I would never have recommended this.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you found somebody who really does what they say, and not for very much.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay,
no. All right, have a good one.
I'm a photographer, long gone photographer. I was an aerial photographer for 30 years.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. Did you hang out of airplanes and helicopters?
Airplanes, helicopters, blimps, balloons, whatever it was.
Wow.
Get me in there. Yeah.
Wow.
So, used all kinds of, I was a Canon pro for years. They used to give me cameras to destroy them.
Oh, but this was film, right?
This was film, and when we went over to digital, I was digital for about 10, 12 years, and then I lost sight in one eye, and it's so funny.
Oh, how frustrating is that as a photographer? Oh, my goodness.
But I still do a fair amount of work with digital stuff because I can point and shoot kind of.
Nice. Well, it's wonderful to meet you. Do you have a website for your pictures, Jerry?
Well, actually, yeah. You could look up Jerry G. E R I concert C O N S as in Sierra E R.
Okay. Oh, I see it.
Just Google me, and I'm there.
Boating Through the Lens.
Yeah.
L.A. Maritime Museum, and her eye for yachts is. There's an article about you in the L.A. Times.
Yeah.
Your plane crashed into the ocean. Is that how you lost your eyesight?
No, I've had a lot of crashes. No, I had a funny, just a stupid accident. But anyway, no.
Nice. Oh, this is great. I'm going to look at all your stuff. How nice to meet you, Jerry.
Well, nice to meet you, too. And I really, really enjoy your show. You're practical. You give a lot of great advice. I listen to you every Saturday.
So you take pictures of yachts.
I do.
Wow.
Fancy-ass yachts. Every big one that's been around for 35 years.
I love yachts. And do the yacht owners pay you for this?
Well, of course.
What a great idea. Did you come up with that?
Well, there are a few of us out. Actually, I'm about one of about a dozen women aerial photographers in the world. So, yeah, there's a few of us out there.
That is so cool. Aerial yacht Thank photography.
You. You got it.
Well, it's so nice to meet you, Jerry.
So nice to meet you, too.
Take care.
Nice on the phone as you are at the end.
Oh, you're a sweetie. Thank you. Take
uh-huh.
care.
Bye-bye.
I love your pictures. Look, they're in the L.A. Maritime Museum. This is awesome. Wow.